Prosecutors argued Meta knowingly put profits before the protection of children.
The conduct, as I said, was repeated again and again. Over an entire decade in a kid's life, that's forever. That it was done and made with knowledge that serious harm would result, and it did.
We believe the evidence has shown that Meta works incredibly hard to protect users, including teens.
In accordance with the civil penalty instruction and the instructions as a whole, how many willful violations did Meta commit by engaging in unfair or deceptive trade practice? The jury's answer is 37,500.
Big tech critics hail Big Tobacco moment and landmark social media verdict against Meta, the parent company of Facebook, and Google, intentionally being addictive and depressing and controlling. Yeah, and parents let their kids do that. I'm not defending big tech, but once you go down this slippery slope of, oh, the way they did it, yeah, and you let your kids do that, give me a break. What's sick is Trump doesn't have Elon Musk on his new big tech board. He's got the good guys off the board and has put his arch enemy, Zuckerberg, on the board and a bunch of other garbage. And people are like, oh, there you are, throwing Trump under the bus again. Zuckerberg got $400 million to create the databases of dead people and illegals and all that to steal the 2020. Okay, fine, I love Zuckerberg if Trump says so. Got Todd Blanche, a Democrat, run the DOJ. This ain't good. And I'm going to bet you about it. Meta must pay $375 million for violating New Mexico's law in child exploitation case.
Companies have been very effective in using something called Section 230, which is a law in this country that protects the companies who have social media from being liable for things that their users post on the site. What these two cases focused on is how the company manipulated the algorithm and developed products like Infinite Scroll in order to give kids an addictive product that would keep them on the site and keep them coming back. And what ended up happening is those kids would use those addictive products and then ultimately have suicidal thoughts or potentially body dysmorphia, or they'd be getting unsolicited messages from child predators. And the company is knowingly, according to documents revealed in both of these cases, understands that this is a problem that they have. And both juries found that they did not do enough to stop this. So again, a huge landmark here, not for the dollar figure, but for the significance of the rulings.
Government shouldn't be involved in the First Amendment. We shouldn't have internet all over the world. They're bringing internet IDs. They're protecting kids. Hey, you put the parental controls on or don't let your kids on devices. Control what you give your kids, folks. It's not the state's job. Because Zuckerberg's a predator preying on your children. Blackmer's Trump America AI Act repeals Section 230, expands AI liability, and mandates age verification. No, it's the AI Dictatorship Act that Trump tried to get passed before he got back in office. Republicans did, but he pushed, and then he signed an executive order on that makes big tech and AI above the law. Nobody can sue them. Congress can't. Local legislators can't challenge them. Citizens can't sue them. And then the executive branch can let AI do whatever it wants. It's Congress has created the AI liability protection dictatorship bill to enforce Trump's executive order that is wrong. That's the real headline. Overhyped. This is some good news. New polls suggest Americans are shunning AI as a breaking news source. They're rejecting it. They don't want it. Well, I don't just believe polls. Oh, I like the proof. The biggest video generating tool is no more. Is the AI bubble bursting? ChatGPT has shut down its AI system because not enough people are using it. It costs too much money, and it's a failure. People are sick of it. U.S. bans foreign-made consumer routers over cybersecurity concerns. I told people decades ago, China has all these remote control kill chips and everything. Now it's all admitted. And then it just continues. Apple forces UK iPhone age checks in iOS 6.26.4. Yeah, the UK, Australia, they're all making Apple and other companies do age verifications. Hey, then adults have to do it. And now it's Internet ID that in the UN Gates-run standardization will be used for the cashless society, the social credit score, the grid. So people are like, don't you want to not let kids look at porn? Yeah, if you're dumb enough to give your kid a phone that doesn't have...
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive, the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
You're listening to The American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
We are back. Rex Jones, Tim Tompkins, American Journal. How are you doing, Tim?
Better than I deserve, man.
Indeed. Every day breathing is a good day.
The
good
boys
message.
Are back.
Yes.
It's nice to be back with you again. I love doing this, honestly, with the two of us, the dynamic. But I got to give you your flowers, man. You've been holding it down. I've been watching the solos. My schedule doesn't allow me to be here every day, but you, my friend...
We've been making it work. Tim's been contributing a lot, helping me find articles, helping me find videos and sources and stuff, because it's very difficult to fill 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, but we love doing it, especially when we're both on here. We're able to have guests of the caliber we're going to have on today. Tell them a little bit about Simon Dixon, who's got joining us at the bottom of the next hour.
So Simon is, he's a great guy.
He's a genius.
We had him on the show. He is one of the original people in Bitcoin, the people who have been pushing it. He's tried to start his own bank in England.
Yes.
He's got an extensive history. He used to be on Wall Street. He knows everything about the financial system and the industrial complexes that control behind the scenes. So he's like one of those insiders where you're going to get the best information because he's in rooms that the average person is not in. So I really love to have him on the show. I was like, hey, we got to make sure that enough people hear
this.
Well,
this is a guy that tried to make the first new bank in England in like hundreds of years and was on the precipice of doing it. And they tell you how the whole system works. And he's like, okay, I'm going into crypto. I'm going into these alternative modes of currency. And that's what he's really an expert on. Yes. And an early Bitcoin adopter. I believe Max Kaiser and him are mutuals as well. Yeah. And that person has a long-time affiliation with my father, so it's very cool. Very cool to have Simon Dixon here on the network. We've been trying to get him on for a little while, but, you know, we're new at doing this. Things can be a little bit imperfect, but that's why we do it. We love the struggle.
Yes, we do love the struggle. But, again, phenomenal guest to have on. You guys are going to really enjoy that at 9 a.m.
Yeah, let's get into the news here. We got Trump's latest tweet, and this is clip one. I want to just go ahead and throw to this because we're not trying to just do the politics and war show. We got a lot of varied information from y'all, but y'all want direct updates. This is the first news show on InfoWars in the morning. Let's go to clip one.
How close are you getting that coalition?
Well, we have a coalition for them, but they should have been up here a long time ago. And, you know, they're affected. The amazing thing is we don't need the hormone strain. We don't need it. We don't need it at all. We have so much oil. Our country is not affected by this. We have more.
All right, let's pause.
We have twice.
Okay. So he's saying, can we leave it up on the screen?
We don't need it.
He's saying, you don't need it. We have all the oil you need. Just buy it from us. And then number two, build up some courage and just go take it. Go take the straight. Here's the thing. Patriots are in control. We've heard this. We've heard that the situation is under control. Does this sound under control?
Well, I mean, we've been saying that for a while. As soon as, you know, the missiles start flying over to the middle, to these Gulf states. Don't worry, guys. It's under control. Don't panic. We know you have drones go get to these high rises, but don't panic.
Don't worry. We'll take care of it. Oh, South Korea, Japan. We're going to need those missile defense systems you have, by the way. We got to take them to the Middle East. Oh, the Gulf countries like, yes, is it for us, brother? Is it for us? No. It's not for you. It's for us and Israel. So like our allies are just like, okay. And they were like, you can buy the oil from us or you can just go take it yourselves. I mean, taking it themselves means making a deal with Iran. That's what that really means.
That does.
That's the hidden message.
Well,
there.
I mean, at this point, you either do that or you go to Russia, right? Because Russia's rolling in the cash. I think they made $760 million within the last month or two, yeah, just off of the
something
new.
Like that.
So, I mean, I don't see how you just say take it without force. So you're saying commit your troops, commit your ships, get into this conflict if you want some oil.
Right.
Like the Philippines right now, I think they were at like 40 days before all of their oil reserves. It's like a national crisis. He's like, go ahead, Philippines. Go take your oil. That's all you need. Just go send some ships out there. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. And this is going to destroy the rest of the world. It's already started to do that. And just because we're insulated from that here doesn't mean it's not going to affect us down the road. And here's the thing. A lot of people love America. A lot of people really still love America around the world. We're trying our damnedest to remove that. And that really sucks.
It is. And it's that like playing both sides things where like people are like, well, we trust you, but then you like stab us in the back.
Right.
And that's the thing that the rest of the world is not going to cooperate with. And again, we're pushing most of our allies closer to our enemies by doing these types of things. And we all know, you know, talk is cheap. Like people want to see actions now, and not just in America, but across the world. That's really what they want to see.
Yeah, more looking into it. Like you looked into it enough. We got a war. Okay, so like it's time to go get on your bike.
Well, you know it's bad when the Pope starts speaking up too, because I've never seen him say anything for these other conflicts.
The Pope said, and we don't have this article. Maybe we can pull it up, but it's not super important. The Pope said that the prayers of those who like commit wars or start wars go unanswered because they have blood on their hands.
And he's American.
Right.
So, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, folks. Like, I mean, if an American Pope is going out
the
there.
The Pope is a sad loser. like that's what you get, right? But seriously, let's go ahead and get into clip two. And this is what's going on in Israel right now. This is just a brief little story. They've passed the death penalty. If you are a Palestinian convicted of killing an Israeli, they'll automatically kill you. So let's watch them. Let's see how they celebrate this. They're saying, not to interrupt you, Tim, they're saying they've got thousands of people already basically lined up that they are going to execute now that this has been passed. And here's the thing, you know, you're in a public relations image battle. Why would you do something like this?
Why would you? Now explain the scenario for me and maybe some other people. Like, so what does this end up doing? Like they're celebrating.
Well, it's an ethnicity specific law. So it'd be like, okay, so like if a white man kills a white man, trial, jail, whatever, if a black man kills a white man, black man gets killed. You see what I'm saying? That's the type of fun, you know, secular liberal law that we have here. That makes sense to you?
Yeah. It's pretty dark, right? It is pretty dark. But you know, you just see it. These people don't care. They're detached from reality.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for them, if it doesn't affect them, they're like, well, who cares?
Right. And it's also like we talked to our guest that we had on, Nate Collin. It's also the ultra orthodox faction that all these people represent. And they don't have to serve in the military.
Yeah.
They get kickbacks. It's all of it. And it's really a sickening faction.
Yeah. We had an Israeli citizen on our show probably a couple of weeks ago, and he kind of runs us through kind of how Israel's structured. And it really is like Rex is talking about.
Like a ruling class.
There's a ruling class, and the ruling class is like these ultra orthodox, like super conservative, religious sects.
And they're super rich, but they act broke.
Yeah. They're able to go to, they don't have to pay taxes. They get what, stipends or something like that.
Stuff like
pretty
that.
Much the rest of
they
Israel.
They panhandle. They beg for money. That's literally what he said.
It would be like if all the people, homeless people in, you know, America were to be like the ruling class. This isn't my words. This is how he equated it to where they're going around begging and they're supposed to be superior to the average person who's working.
And we just take a look at that and people around the world are going to reject that and hate that. That's why we played that clip. Let's go ahead and go to clip three. And I wanted to have a robust discussion with you on this. Let's talk about it for the next 15 minutes or so. So we've got these robot security droids, these like spider dogs. And apparently it's like half the cost to employ them versus a traditional security company. You're a homeless person in Atlanta. You get rolled up on by one of these.
And dude, that's straight out of Black Mirror.
Yeah, it's RoboCop.
Oh, it's waving at you.
Dude,
what?
It's terrifying, bro. I hate this so much.
Wow.
That's capitalism now.
Coming to a city near you.
Seriously. Halt, citizen. Halt, citizen. Did you pay walking fee, citizen? Like, you'll have to pay your carbon credit.
Wait till they strap a gun on it.
That's what I said too. Absolutely.
That's when it becomes really scary.
Yeah. And you're going to see that. I mean, we're going to see, like, this is a whole new era of like unprecedented stuff, because this technology. Yeah. We watched the Boston Dynamics robot like 15 years ago or whatever. This is now mass produced, mass accessible. They're going to be trying to put this in all sorts of various applications. What do you think about that?
Yeah, they are. Okay, so
as an engineer,
I look at this two ways, because I'm in media, but I'm also behind the scenes in technology, and I'm seeing advancements and things where it is useful for the application. So it's very hard for me to look at these situations and paint it all black, right? There is a part of me that is afraid of, there not being checks and balances to some of this stuff.
Okay.
To where it's like, how do you determine what's right from wrong? And the AI has to determine that. Now, that's based off of human input. But the part that I see specifically that is actually useful for the average person is when we talk about specific, like, repetitive motion stuff. And this is just technology that goes in like manufacturing. Now, you and I disagree sometimes on this about AI replacing jobs, those types of things. You can give your standpoint on that real quick before I kind of continue.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's just they're building a grid where eventually they're not going to need as many people. And then kind of everything we see as a consequence of that, these resource wars, these depopulation efforts, like mass migration everywhere. It's really an effort to collapse human society, because they want 500 million people and they want some sort of technological grid that they run. Now, I think technology is great, and if it's true power to the people, a human supremacist view where everyone gets access to it equally, I think that would be awesome. But you look at these people talk about it, and they're like, yeah, like, we want intelligence to be sold basically on a meter, like electricity or water or something like that. And what that means, there's going to be someone with a million times the ability that you have.
Okay, so yeah, and let me so let me clarify something. So technology is only good depending on how it's implemented and who's behind the implementation.
Sure, like a
itself.
Knife doesn't kill anybody; the person with the knife kills.
Right. So you get to a scenario where I see there being a light at the end of the tunnel. Here's the thing about manufacturing and some of the things, like, there have been a lot of job replacements across America, specifically in manufacturing.
Right.
And the thing is. When you look at a piece of technology, it takes away some of the ergonomics and the pain that happens when an operator has to do a task, a repetitive task specifically.
So just a key example, not to interrupt you. You talked to me on the gray area, the show we do Thursday and Sunday at 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. You talked to me on the gray area about working at a specific job. I won't say exactly what it is, but this bag gets passed in front of this very bright light.
Yeah.
Maybe go into that.
Let me clarify, because not all jobs are good jobs for humans. There are certain things that, like, you would want a robot or something to take over that, because it's actually doing harm to that person. So what he's talking about, there are bags, and those bags, you have to screen them to make sure there's nothing inside
particulate
matter inside of this bag. And there's a super bright white light, and there's bags moving across. And imagine sitting in that chair for 8 hours a shift. You get like 30 minutes and you're sitting there staring at this bright light, and you can't take your face off of looking at that. Otherwise, you're going to be in trouble. And that bag it's not just one bag. There's thousands of bags moving across your screen. Now, you have vision systems that we're trying to implement to replace that person so that they can go do something else instead of having to sit there and be miserable.
And that sounds great. That sounds great to me.
Where the problem is, and this is where I agree with you, is what do we do when you get to a point where, you know, there's not enough jobs and there's more robots that have taken over those positions? Because that can happen in a scenario. Our problem is we haven't come up with systems where we kind of encourage humans to go do the things that they're supposed to do, or some type of UBI, which, again, everyone's going to call me socialist, but, like, we've got enough resources to be able to help people out. Humans were never designed to be sitting in a 4x4 square moving pieces over and over and over again, repetitive motion. That's where the robot is supposed to step in. I don't want AI to take over people's creativity. We've got to give people an ability to even do something else. And that's also the problem here, right?
Yeah, you know, I would agree. It's a real double-edged sword type of scenario. And The thing is, it's going to take them 40 to 50 years to have a robot that can crawl under your house and do your plumbing. It's going to take them the same for like high tech, like electrician work, all of these things. The real job loss that we're going to see, that we're already starting to see, Tim, is the white collar
It's the white collar. It's the tech job. That's actually the biggest sector that's being affected, because robotics haven't been able to mimic human motion quite yet.
And yeah, that's the thing. The fingers have like 3,000 joints or whatever, like in the hand, like axis of mobility.
Yeah. You're 100% correct about that. So what you're seeing first is the white collar jobs. Specifically, you've got coders that are in jeopardy, a lot of data, analysis, a lot of people who are kind of doing clerk style work where now the AI can do that. Yeah, that is a real risk. And the problem is they don't have, every generation, or let's say every few hundred years, we go through a transition like this. But this one is even bigger.
New industrial revolution.
When agriculture equipment was invented, there were a ton of farmers doing manual labor jobs.
Right.
What ended up happening is you displaced, and there was a lot of pain early on to say, well, what do I do if I don't know how to farm? Where do I go, Rex?
You don't die.
Yeah. Right. It took a transition period for that person to go from doing that and go into something like manufacturing, where it still required people.
And the thing that's really crazy about the time we live in are these giant jumps, like from Bronze Age to Iron Age to Steel Age to Industrial Revolution to contemporary, like Space Age, where we're at today. It's just gotten shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. And now everything we see coming out is compounding upon itself. It's like the saying is, like, we stand on the shoulders of giants. That's true. Eventually, the real thing that we're all worried about with this technology is what happens when the knife has a will of its own. What happens when the thing decides that it doesn't want to do the work of its masters anymore?
No, and I totally get that perspective. And let me clarify for everybody listening. I'm not pro, like, let's go and replace a bunch of people's jobs with robots.
But you're a realist. But I
am being realistic, because I'm in the forefront. I see, you know, people being replaced because they shouldn't be lifting 800-pound items, and you've got a robot that's now doing that particular task. It's not really 800. I'm exaggerating. It's more like 80 pounds, but it's still the same concept. So I'm not pro that. The problem is we are getting into a transition to where you're going to see the jobs are being removed quicker than they can be replaced and moved into a different skill set. That's the problem.
And it's really dangerous too, to have a bunch of people unemployed and like in a declining economy already that's trying to replace them. I want to show clip 4, because here's the thing. I don't think robots should imitate human form. I think that should be illegal, but I'm not against applications like this. Let's go to clip 4. This is real. Look at that.
I mean, being a firefighter is dangerous.
No, 100%, but look how cool this is.
It is cool. I've been seeing these as well.
And see, with that, you get one less person that has to have the smoke exposure. You can get closer to the fire, to the coals, without getting burned. That's great. And I love that.
This is a good application.
That's as good as it can get.
You and I are in agreement on this one. The problem is do we have a lot of faith at with the adults in the room, right?
Right.
To make the right decisions when it comes to rolling out this technology and giving people an alternative. At this point, I don't trust anybody who's in these systems, because they're showing how they're betraying the American people time after time after time after time. And when you rely on them to make a good decision in a vacuum where no one is there watching them, somehow these people are making the wrong choices.
Yeah, the homeless guy is going to do my taxes. I trust him. That's basically what we have with the government. And when you look at our government at large, the main issue, you know, as a kid, as a young libertarian, okay, when I was a little boy, a little fan of Ron Paul and all of that back in the day, okay, when I'm a young libertarian, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm losing my train of thought here. When I'm a young libertarian, I'm like, okay, there should be less regulations, so these companies should be able to do what they want, so we can have innovation and science and technology. What I realize now is that there's too little regulation on the things that matter, and there's way too much regulation on the things that are totally irrelevant and just keep small businesses
absolutely
down.
Right. And one of the areas that we have to look at specifically is AI. AI regulation is severely behind the ball in terms of catching up with the technology.
10 years, no regulation. That's the law they passed, literally.
Yeah. And the AI companies have their own lobbies just like the military industrial complex. So they go in there. They're like, well, we want less regulations. That way we can make more money.
Checks out.
Right? Here's the thing about AI right now. You know what I think should be banned completely? You shouldn't be able to take a person that exists in real life and be able to clone that person on AI unless that person is the one doing the action or you have specific rights to yourself.
You mean like if you come up with a logo and you get it copyrighted, I can't steal that, but I can steal your entire image?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, it's a new way for scammers. Look, I think everybody understands right now it's getting crazy scary to be able to tell the difference between what's real and what's not real.
You get a phone call and it sounds like somebody talking to you. It's not, yep. I am a robot. You know,
and this was one of those things where the technology was intended to be good.
Right.
And we have bad actors that are doing things with that. Remember, maybe you didn't see these, but it used to be on YouTube. They kind of cracked down on this. There used to be AI ads of like Joe Rogan pitching a product
on Rumble. Oh, yeah.
And I was like, wait, I fell for it at first. I'm like, wait, but that sounds weird. Now they're getting fraud. But now they're getting to the point where it's so good, guys, that you're not going to be able to tell with like 11 labs or some of these other technologies where they're cloning people's voices. It's almost like for like.
Yeah. And I had such a good one of my dad made on 11 labs like a year plus ago. And it's only just gotten so much better, so much better, so much better.
Yep.
This is the world we live in, guys. It really is sci-fi. We're getting ushered into that age. There's no running from it.
And the last thing I'll say on this is these AI models, they are trained to basically continue to evolve themselves at the same time with less and less human input.
Right.
So again, it's like that exponential curve and the compounding effect. As the AI gets smarter, it knows how to fix its gaps and the human doesn't have to step in. I mean, it's eventually going to get to AGI. We'll see how that happens. We say we're not that far, but we might be closer than we think.
And it's a very human impulse to think of everything as linear and as like following like a constant gradient. But in reality, everything that we're talking about here is exponential, just like with the time development of the technology, the rapid advancements we've seen over the last century, over the last decade.
Yes.
Really.
But we have to speak about these things, and people in positions of power, especially Congress, need to step up to the plate and do the job that we ask them to do and protect us along the way. Technology, when it's guided in the right way and it's got the right barriers, the right protections, can be a net positive for society, or it can be a net negative when we have people who are corrupt just wanting to grab a bag and screw over the American person. That's the problem.
And that's the systemic problem
that
we address on this show. That's what we see in every sector, and we rail against it. And it's our job to get involved in the political process, especially after Trump being gone. It's going to be a whole new world. So if you're passionate about AI regulation, a digital bill of rights, going forward and having an actual future for humanity where we utilize these things instead of being used by them, we're the people you want to see. Rex mm-hmm. Jones, Tim Dawkins.
Yeah, man. And anybody who's dealing with any job loss due to AI,
yes.
we deeply, sincerely feel for you. We're sorry about that. I've had a lot of friends, a lot of people that have been dealing with this. It has to get worse before it gets better, but there is some light at the end of the tunnel. We have people that are starting to step up and actually start making those changes to the laws specifically. So.
Absolutely. We'll be right back. You're going to want to stay with us. We're going to have Simon Dixon on at the start of the next hour for an entire hour, leading Bitcoin expert, early adopter, geopolitical analyst. You're going to want to stay tuned.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15, 20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down, to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. And I've been telling you this for decades. They have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research. The human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information that the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document the potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com if you're a VIP member for 50% off, regular customers 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation, total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our ultra methylene blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
Tim Tompkins here with you in studio, and we got big news in the Charlie Kirk case. What's going on there? Let's get that article.
It is breaking. Okay, we heard about this morning. You guys want to listen up. So we've got an article here that says the bullet used to kill him did not match the rifle used by Tyler Robinson. That is a big banger.
Go figure, right? Like I hunt with a 308, okay? 30-06 is a bigger round than 308. When I shoot through a deer, like it explodes out the other side.
And you've been talking about this since day one. You were like, there's no way that bullet could have been the same bullet that killed him.
And we had a debate with a friend of ours, and the friend of ours was like, well, bullet could bounce around, bullet could do this, that, other ballistics. I'm like, it's a big round. He's not a man of steel. The doctor claimed that he was a man of steel and that his neck stopped the bullet.
Mm-hmm.
He's not Superman.
He's not Superman.
Yeah.
You know, so let's go ahead and read this article.
Yeah, sure. In the killing of Charlie Kirk, defense lawyers for Tyler Robinson claim the bullet did not match the alleged rifle. They cite DNA complexities as well and incomplete forensic data while seeking delay, raising doubts over key prosecution evidence. In a new court filing on Tuesday, March 31st, defense attorneys for Tyler Robinson, the accused who allegedly killed conservative influencer Charlie Kirk, have claimed that the Bureau of the ATF was unable to match the bullet recovered during the autopsy to the rifle allegedly used by Robinson, stating that the recovered weapon was a Mauser Model 98 30-06 caliber rifle. The defense lawyer stated the ATF analyst could not conclusively identify the bullet fragment. So they didn't even have it. They don't. So the guy gets shot. There's no exit wound on camera. Blood doesn't spray out the back of his body. Lord forbid, God have mercy. Like it's just so horrible. We have to talk about this so callously, but we're talking about a criminal case that's captivated the nation, a very prominent political assassination at the end of the day here.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I think everybody knew there was something fishy going on behind the scenes, all the evidence, all the things. And my issue was specifically all types of narratives were coming out. You had
deliberate misinformation.
Well, misinformation, you know, and you know, I used to like old Candace, but the new Candace was doing things like Fort Huachuca, Waka Haka.
Fort Hawktua.
Yeah. And it's like, she's talking about like secret meetings and, you know, maybe somebody popped out of a sewer Ninja pipe, Turtle. Like Ninja Turtle or Super Mario.
The mic exploded and there's like a bomb in the lapel mic and stuff. And you told me when I was like, no, I'm going to watch all of Candace's episodes for this month so that I can know that I can say confidently that I know it's BS. Because people, when I came out against the narrative on Twitter, when we did really, people were like, you need to know what she's saying before you criticize. And I was like, well, okay, I listened to it. Mitch Snow is this guy who's involved in like border military operations. Like 30 years ago, he supposedly claims that he uncovered evidence that the military was working with the cartel, specifically a photo of some sort of military leader with a cartel member on some sort of tunnel around the border. He makes this claim that this hurt his military service somehow. He comes back like 30 years later to the day, to the base, and 12 colonels and Erica Kirk and everyone's there. And my ex-wife had eyes like those. I'd never forget those eyes. And it's just like we're not in a Quentin Tarantino movie. Okay, like, sorry.
Well, and the biggest problem is if you got people with big enough platforms coming out with stories, it takes away from the main narrative and the real stuff that's going on.
Because we do question it. And that's the thing. It's like we don't buy the official narrative. We have the article right here. The official narrative is a lie, right? But that doesn't mean we believe in the Ninja Turtles.
Yes. And then here's the thing. It doesn't take rocket science to see like things were not adding up, and specifically around the text messages. If you guys recall, and we'll get these in order too specifically, because Rex and I are going to read this out for you guys.
You talk a little bit, I'll get it done.
Basically, there were text messages that apparently came out between Tyler Robinson and his roommate. Now, apparently they had this lovers quarrel. I think his roommate was transgender, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know. Maybe a furry or something.
And there were these text messages that came out. Now, we're going to read some of these text messages and we're going to see what you guys think about them, because we're like, there's no way that this was a real exchange and we had some boomers. I think it starts here first with the September 10th.
Yeah.
And then we got the second one underneath.
We got delete this exchange. We got don't talk to the media, please. And then a bit over a week. We'll just read it like that. And it doesn't really matter if it gets a little jumbled.
Well, so let's start here with drop what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. So this is supposedly the conversation between the assassin and his lover. Okay. And this reads like it's scripted, like it's written by like a middle-aged man pretending to be AI, some sort of intel officer at the FBI or CIA, whatever it is.
Drop what you're doing. Look under my keyboard.
What? You're joking, right?
I'm still okay, my love, but I'm stuck in Orm for a little while longer yet. Shouldn't be long until I can come home, but I gotta grab my rifle still. To be honest, I'd hope to keep this secret till I died of old age.
You're killing Charlie Kirk. It's gonna be a secret until I die of old age that I climbed on a roof and I killed the most prominent person in conservative media. This can't be real. And also, 20-year-olds don't talk like this.
No, it's okay.
Where's the no cap? I slimed him out.
I slimed him out be a good one. They missed that one.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep reading.
Yeah.
You weren't the one who killed it, who did it, right?
I am, I'm sorry.
I thought they caught the person.
And
just let's read off.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. No, they grabbed some crazy old dude that interrogated someone in similar clothing. I had planned to grab my rifle from the drop point. Ooh, the drop point. Okay. All these military terms. Shortly after, but most of the side of town, it got locked down. It's quiet, almost enough to get out, but there's one vehicle lingering.
Why?
Why did I do it?
Yeah.
I had enough of his hatred. Come on, man. Come on, bro. I had enough of his hatred. Some, it's totally fake. Some hate can't be negotiated out. If I am able to grab my rifle unseen, I would have left no evidence. Going to attempt to retrieve it again. Hopefully they have moved on. I haven't seen anything about them finding it. Okay, so hold on. He does the act, then he puts his rifle in the bushes, then he's coming back to get his rifle later. Why wouldn't you just leave?
That's what I'm saying.
None of it makes sense.
And not even just that, right? Everybody who's watched, like, you know, any crime TV show knows you don't leave a clear trail for law enforcement to be able to follow.
I was here at this time. I did this thing. I'm hiding from the cops. Go ahead. Sorry.
It's like, I did this. This was the weapon. This was the bullet I used. This is my area code of where I live. I am the person who did it. That's pretty much what
this
the text message.
This is why I did it. This is my premeditated motivation for doing it.
Well, and so, like, again, we can clearly definitively say when we saw these text messages, Rex and I, as well as the rest of you guys, were like, there's no way this story is true. And it's just beautiful. Beautiful to see that they're still following through on this, because I thought they were going to let this one go just like Trump's assassination attempt.
Well, they're trying to, but ultimately, I mean, it just shows how massive Charlie Kirk was and his influence just on the world and America in general. You can't really make this die just because there's so many hours of Charlie on tape recently talking about everything that's going on in the world right now. And the reason why people call all this into question is because Charlie was very passionately anti-war, incredibly pro-Israel as well, but very passionately anti-war. And he made a lot of statements talking about the October 7th stand down. Like, we've talked about the Israeli citizen interview we did earlier. Like, we've heard about that from other people. Like, they're mad about that as well.
They are.
He had all these legitimate questions and, oh, he doesn't get to ask questions anymore.
And he was speaking about out against Iran. He was speaking about foreign entanglement. And here's the thing. They knew Charlie was a threat. He galvanized the youth, and just look at TPUSA, right?
Right.
The amount of offices that they had across the United States and the colleges that they were going to, that is a ton of influence. And when you can influence a young generation into a narrative which we support of the no new wars, the conflicts, those kinds of things, they see you as a threat. The industrial complex sees you as a threat for those things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what you have with TPUSA is you have, I think they have 1,000 campaign offices and many thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of affiliated volunteers or employees. You have a ready-made political campaigning system that is targeted towards young people that young people accept and love and view as legitimate. So you take the brain out of that and you do a brain transplant into it. That's pretty much the ideal scenario. So you can't look at the Charlie Kirk thing and go, well, there's absolutely no motive to take him out besides someone that's mad about him not liking trans people.
Yes.
There's tons of reasons why you would do something.
And then remember, before, I guess the night before he was assassinated, there were meetings that were going on. He was getting angry. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
Earlier on.
Earlier on.
Months before, but yeah.
Was it? Okay.
A couple months before, but there were other stuff happening in motion constantly.
In motion constantly.
And, so you're right also.
And there were people that were unhappy with what he was doing specifically and what he was speaking out against. Now, we don't know exactly who's behind this. I'm seeing people say, well, it could have been the Israelis. It could have been some people who...
It could have been easily private corporate interest as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many shows do we watch? I think it was like Yellowstone or something where like people meet in the big tower, like, we're going to take the $1 billion company over. Mm-hmm. But like that is real, right? But it doesn't happen at like a military base with 12 colonels and the wife and they plot the assassination attempt. These decisions are made quietly.
Yeah. But one thing that I can't get behind, and I've seen this narrative come out so much, is that Erica Kirk is behind the assassination attempt. Like, come on. Like, that one kind of rubbed me the wrong way, because I'm like, she's married to this man, has two kids, and you can see their life prior to this. They were happily married. You could see them in love.
Sure. I mean, people criticize her. She's acting a little weird. I say she's a widow. I'm not really going to try to attack that ship. I don't think it's worth it. You can just criticize things based on facts and evidence alone, right? And there's more than enough of that here. Basically, here's the thing. You have people doing the Charlie Kirk show right now, the Charlie Kirk show with the same name, talking about
about the Iran war in like a neutral to positive context.
Well, and what are you going to do? You're going to let his name die. You're going to let the whole operation die.
Change the show. Change the name. If my dad died, it's not the Alex Jones show.
You think
anymore.
So?
Yeah.
Well, here's what I'm thinking, right? Like, I understand, like, some people are like, well, she's grifting off of her husband's death and X, Y, and Z. Here's
she's
the
got
thing.
To feed as well.
That's what I was literally about to say. You can't criticize. She's got to be able to find a way to make money for her family because that was what Charlie was doing, and she needs to step into the place as the head of the house now.
Yeah.
So it's not like she's just going to go back and do a 9-to-5, guys. Like, she's got to find a new way. So, of course, you know, she's having conversations, and there's ways that they're going to do in order to continue. And they have a ton of people on payroll, by the way.
Oh, you got Drewski up there.
Oh, the Drewski. What did you think about that, by the way? We haven't talked about that.
So
we won't go too far.
When he did the NASCAR thing, I genuinely didn't recognize him. I thought he was just like a fat white person with a beard. This is highly offensive, but hey, you know what? I've said that Kanye doing the Hitler thing is art. I can't call that not art as well.
Yeah. I mean, the joke was funny, but I mean, again, it's who you pick.
I'm a free speech absolutist. I can't be a hypocrite. Yeah. If you're mad at me right now for saying that, like, I can't hold two positions that are contrary to each other. Like, I endorse Alex Stein crashing out. I have to endorse Drewski crashing out. Those are the rules.
And here's the thing. As a black person, a lot of black people are not going to appreciate me saying this. But again, I have to be ideologically consistent. Now, I'm not saying people need to go out and start doing this, but because he is doing whiteface, it does bring a case where, like, is blackface okay? Like, we can't just say one side is...
Here's the thing, and I'll give a little bit of a liberal argument. I would say because of the history that goes along with the blackface, that makes it a little
It does. It does make it a little bit different. And all I'm just trying to tell you is, like, within a vacuum, I don't support... Why would I support this? I don't support people going out and doing blackface. It is highly offensive.
But we do support free speech, ultimately. And here's the thing. We can look at someone doing something and say, this is disgusting, whatever. But at the end of the day, it's a part of our society. It and is. In a society where you can do that, it's a lot better than a cop showing up to your house with a gun because of, you know, what you did on social media.
Yes.
So I'm not participating in it, but I do endorse it as freedom. Mm-hmm. But we look at the whole thing, and just getting back to Erica Kirk in general, you have someone like her, and they essentially plug her in because she's the wife of Charlie Kirk. She's the only one that feasibly could have the street cred to run the operation and keep it as it is. But she's not running anything. Like, she's controlled. Like, there's tons of people. There's tons of money. There's things that keep the operation afloat. There's everything that we don't see. Right. So it's hard to make a value judgment based off of that. I want to go to the clip number 5. Because you've talked to me a lot about the space age weaponry and stuff like that. Have you heard about the discombobulator?
No. Discombobulator. Now we're getting into like fantasy.
So there were rumors that we used the so-called discombobulator on the Venezuelans.
Okay.
Like, the special forces came in. There was a report. It looked like it had been written by the CIA, but
they couldn't find a better name.
I like it. It has a lot of words. Discombobulator. Yeah. But let's go ahead and roll the clip.
What have you heard about the discombobulator? Because I hadn't heard anything in that much detail since Halperin said it made everybody yak.
You know, there's a lot of directed energy weapons that we've had for a while, and we've tested them. There's some that can make you feel heat. You know, there's sound waves that can make you just freak out and discombobulate you. What exactly they're using and what was used in Venezuela has not been publicly announced. It's just one of those things that we have that makes it a big advantage, because when you are going into a place where the enemy knows where you're coming, you don't want to lead with your face. You know, that's a cardinal rule of door-kicking operations.
Yeah.
Have something in front of you for that. So that's why you throw flashbangs in a room. This is a directed energy flashbang to blow everybody's mind and hopefully get our guys in and safely back out.
Yeah, I learned that in boxing.
They couldn't, that's what I'm saying, like, they couldn't find a better name than discombobulator.
Well, I like that Fox News is just like, you're like a boomer in like Galveston, Texas, and you turn on the TV and it's just Jesse Waters and this guy talking about discombobulators. It's just like explosion footage.
What?
Just drone strike footage just over and over,
over and over again.
You're like, oh, that's a big one. That's a good
one. Well, they love their war footage. That's what they do for the B-roll
Fox News, man, it's become a parody of itself.
Well, and just what a time to be alive that we have. have discombobulators and only farms and just all types of new stuff. And I'm like, how do I take these things serious anymore? Like, so the whole point of that technology, it's basically like almost like a flashbang is the way they're
like, you ever heard of like Havana syndrome?
No.
We're like, it's like this pseudo thing, but apparently it may be real where like you get like waves sent at you and it like makes you sick, delirious.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I read about these weapons like 20 years ago in books that guests would give me here on the show, and they've had things like this forever. A lot of these things, like they'll have like a big panel on a truck and then they direct the panel at the crowd of people, a lot of crowd control. There's like minor and major versions of it in different frequencies that you can use. Sounds pretty fun, right?
Do you think we just like, The people creating weapons at like Lockheed and Raytheon are just like watching movies and they're like, ooh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I got an idea. I mean, that's probably how it works, right? Like as an engineer, you see a system like, maybe, you know, there's a good concept there. Maybe we could engineer something like that similar to happen. I mean, I think back to G.I. Joe. I've always thought that this was terrifying, but a really cool idea of the rods from God, the tungsten rods, right? You could drop in from space and do the kinetic damage without having the fallout of a nuclear weapon.
Wow. I bet you they come out with something like that.
Oh, I think we already have stuff like that up there in orbit. It's pretty terrifying to think about.
Let's talk about who I'm seeing. Massey on glyphosate.
Yes.
Let's talk about
glyphosate
that.
Glyphosate clip.
One of the things in the Farm Bill, I'm still trying to get out of it, was successful in getting this out of prior bills, is immunity for a German company called Bayer that makes glyphosate. This is not to grant farmers immunity. This is to grant the corporation immunity if farmers contract a form of cancer or non-Hodgkin's lymphoma from this chemical. If this makes it into the Farm Bill, you won't be able to sue for that. And I know they're dealing with some similar legislation at the state level.
You know, I learned a lot about this from you because I had no idea that this was an issue. And maybe you can just recap like why glyphosate is so dangerous for us.
Sure. And I'll go ahead and start doing that by giving one of the counter arguments. People will go, it's only used on 3% of the wheat to dry it, bro. Actually, that's not true. It's used on a third of all American fields for wheat control. We used to use about 100 million or 80 million pounds of it. We now use 280 million pounds of it a year. It's ubiquitous in the food supply. 95 to 97% of all corn is Roundup ready. That means it's made to take the pesticide while everything else dies. Spoiler alert, that gets into your body as well. Glyphosate is so dangerous because it's an amino acid analog of the amino acid called glycine, which is used to make all the collagen in your body. So there's been a prevalent health theory, and this has kind of come out over time, that it has the potential to replace that positive amino acid, which is essential for you to have in your body, over time leading to cell senescence and eventually possibly speculating cancer. I mean, not even speculating, RFK Jr. went to court against Monsanto and won a $270 million lawsuit proving it caused non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That means it's carcinogenic. And if it's carcinogenic and causes one cancer, it causes all the other ones as well.
Wow. Wow. And I'm just thinking about it because I'm seeing a lot of people, even in our age group and young 30s, starting the cancer rates are spiking. And it's specifically because of what we're putting in our bodies. Like I had a friend just last year. She's like younger than me. She had like cancer in her neck. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, how are we getting to that point? Now, I thought, you know, RFK was supposed to come in and he was supposed to like open the cabinet up and just start tearing out all the bad
needed for national security. Go ahead.
So what do you think happened? Because I was super excited. The reason, this is one of the reasons why I ran on Trump, because he was bringing in RFK and I loved what he was saying. He was like, we're going to get these chemicals out of your food. We're going to make sure Americans can eat healthy. And now I see more missiles than I see traction on these types of things.
Yeah. And they tell us that, oh, it's too crazy to get the glyphosate out. We have to have 50 different flavors of chips at the gas station. We can never do that. We can never subsidize a program to get the poison out of your food. Oh, another $250 billion for the war, it's just fine. And that's the thing that's so crazy. It's just, why wouldn't you resign at this point, especially if you're one of these people like RFK? We're like, this is literally, he fought for a decade on this issue. And look at it now. Pretty crazy. You know
what? He said, we need more herbicide. Is that what he said?
Go back to it, if you would. Yeah, we love it.
I hope this isn't true.
Liberal. Yeah, we need more herbicide production stunning his followers. I mean, yeah, I mean, war is peace, guys. You didn't hear that. You didn't get the memo. Let's go ahead and go to clip 8 really quick to ring out this segment. Cause here's the thing. Okay. You know, we've talked about the American military and maybe their limitations a little bit. We got big problems because we got real elites. Okay. We got real elite shock troops training out in North Korea. Let's go ahead and show people clip number 8. Oh, oh, hi.
Hey, I wouldn't want to mess with him on the battlefield.
All right, dude, watch this coming
up. Oh, my God.
They're driving nails into the board. Look at that. That's some kung fu stuff right there.
Now, you know, this looks – what? No way. Yeah, that's going to stop a bullet, guys.
All right, watch this. Okay, that's real. Go back to that. We got to show that again. This is real. This is not a joke, guys.
Grenade!
Talk about jumping on the claymore for your boys.
Grenade!
Oh, man. Okay, we're having, you know, maybe you're having a little bit of a rough day. Maybe you haven't had your coffee yet. You got a long drive ahead of you. At least you're not a North Korean in a PR video losing your frontal cortex to a pile of bricks.
Here's the thing. That's all for show. I mean, come on now. The guy's just like, whoa, in front of you. You're just going to be like, boom,
yeah.
You're dead. So I don't know why they do these things. It's probably theatrics. Maybe it's just deep embedded in the culture.
I mean, India, Pakistan, they have that thing on their border where they do like a dance-off where it's like a martial display.
What?
Have you ever seen this?
No, I have.
We got just a little bit of time. The crew are absolute wizards. If you can find that, if we could close out with that. Yeah, they do it because it's a tribal thing of like, this is our border. This is our culture. This is our border. This is our culture. F you, F you.
So like no guns. It's just a dance-off?
They have guns, but they're not pointing them at each other. They're like, it's kind of like a rooster battle. Like they're kind of like stepping like, it's like an intimidation thing. But we see this all around the world. Here's the thing. The Taliban, when they take our military equipment, they do stuff as well. ISIS has the jungle gym and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
We've exported our culture to people. So now they're trying to make their own Hollywood movies as well.
Yeah, they are trying to make their own Hollywood movies now. I mean, look, you know, North Korea is involved in Ukraine now. They're still there, right? They're still dying.
I'm not sure, but they were involved heavily.
They were involved heavily, but we see these things, you know, I guess
there it is.
What is going on here?
And this is how they do the border dispute. This is how they kind of, chrismate it, I guess would be the kind of good nomenclature to describe it. But yeah, we got discussion, side story. We got a, full discussion coming up the next hour with the great Simon Dixon, who's about to join us. Really looking forward to that. You guys want to stay with us for the most hard hitting, cutting edge geopolitical analysis. Aren't you excited?
Yeah, I'm very excited. Simon's going to give you guys insider information into the financial industrial complex. He's going to explain everything that happens behind the Iran situation, who's making money, what it looks like behind closed doors. He is a phenomenal guest. We're going to be looking forward to having him on. You guys don't want to go anywhere. You're going to want to stay tuned. We will be back after the break.
Here at the InfoWars studio in Austin, Texas, there's not a single desk, workstation, or studio where you can't find a half-empty product from thealexjonesstore.com. That's because we all put our money where our mouth is. And you too can be confident that you're putting into your body the absolute best supplements, nootropics, drink mixes, and tinctures that money can buy. So to all of you who are on the fence about ordering from thealexjonesstore.com, what are you waiting for? And to all of you who've made the commitment, we here at InfoWars salute you, and we'd like to say,
thank you for your support.
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 Thank you for your support at thealexjonesstore.com.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
The data for 75 years, all of the clinical data for 75 years from these, if you were trying to be transparent. Tell me why.
So this is a person who was vaccinated four times by Pfizer, 1 year since vaccination, tumors emerged, person was dead within a month. We got three biopsies out of them, one postmortem. All of them have SV40 and the origin of replication from the Pfizer vaccine.
SV40. Or simian virus 40, reared its ugly head back in 1960 when scientists spotted it lurking in rhesus monkey kidney cell cultures that were being held to whip up polio vaccines. SV40, a tumor-making machine, has the large T antigen, a molecular wrecking ball that smashes into cellular control systems like P53 and retinoblastoma protein pathways, turning normal cells into rogue cancer factories. Fast forward to 2025, and messengers from a myriad of professions are shouting from the rooftops about SV40's presence in the COVID vaccines.
These vaccines are not vaccines. They are, in fact, a gene therapy based. This genomic integration, as the scientific literature makes clear, can lead to cancer development, immune system disruption, and more. The sheer levels of contamination detected, up to 145 times permissible limit in some cases, are extraordinary and far beyond what should be allowed in any medicinal product. In my work as an oncologist in the UK, I started to see a disturbing trend as early as February 2022. Patients who had been cancer-free for many years were suddenly relapsing with aggressive explosive cancers shortly after receiving booster doses of the COVID-19 vaccine.
I'll tell you a good story.
Okay.
I have three friends. All three of them had stage 4 cancer. All three of them don't have cancer right now at all. And they had some serious stuff going on.
And what did they take?
Jesus. They took some, what you've heard they've taken.
Ivermectin.
Fenbendazole.
These three advanced cancer patients experienced remission in two cases, complete remission, and in one case near remission, for an extended period of time, years after initiating this fenbendazole protocol, and none of them received chemo either, right? So this was with, it wasn't combination, a few were with a surgery, some did receive a brief dose of radiation, but in general, this fenbendazole was linked to extraordinarily, accelerated tumor reductions in a pretty short period of time with extended survival outcomes with no evidence of disease.
Yeah, I was off their charts, 1,498.
Yeah, the chart didn't even go that high.
That is something else.
That was December 31st. I took my first course of ivermectin on my birthday, February 2nd. February 11th, my CEA was down to 180.
Raise that up a little bit. Wow.
Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public. That's mass murder.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancer from parasites, it's double good. One of the most important things to me in my life is to get things right and to tell the truth and to be accurate. That's why they say Alex Jones is right. But it's not just our news, our prediction, our information that are incredibly accurate. It's the products. And out of all the amazing supplements at thealexjonesstore.com, our methylene blue, ultra methylene blue, is the best you're going to find on the market. It's so good for your body. Instant clean, amazing energy. You owe it to yourself if you sat on the fence to go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get ultra methylene blue. And believe me, you are going to want to reorder it again. We have an 84% reorder on that product. No other supplement anywhere has anything even close. That is how amazing it is. Secure your ultra methylene blue now at thealexjonesstore.com. And thanks for keeping us on the air.
Repeat what you said is happening. You feel in the...
I feel like that stuff in my fingers. I feel tingling fingers.
There's the camera. Blast them with full power right there. Ah! Yeah!
You're tuned in to The American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Broadcast in the world in the morning in this time slot. I am Rex Jones, and I'm here today to tell you we've got the best geopolitical information in the entire world to deliver you right now. We're going to get into it right now with our guest Simon Dixon. Tim Tompkins, my co-host here, figuring it out today. Simon, how are you doing?
I'm awesome. Congratulations on the new show and really happy to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Yeah, we had you on the gray area earlier. Fantastic show. Everybody loved it. And I was like, we got to get him on InfoWars. We got to make this happen. So we're,
I think it was the best interview we've ever done on the information, on the fact side of it, out of like me learning the most. And that's high praise, I know, but I want to give it to you. And that's why we had to deliver it to other people.
We're men of our words. We just wanted to get you on. So let's just get started because there's a lot that people don't know about you, Simon. And I want to talk specifically before we go into more other details about your personal history and some of the things that's led you to the positions where you're at now, because your story about Wall Street and all the things is something that needs to be heard. So can you just walk us through a high level overview of that, of your history?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've done nothing but obsess over the topic of money and who benefits from the creation of money for the last 25 years. My journey started when my father lost his entire retirement in the dot-com boom and bust, so 25 years ago. And he worked his whole life, lost it all in the market, and asked me to figure out where it went. So that kind of kicked off an obsession. Tried to figure it out at university, did like a master's in economics, still didn't get the answers. So I tried to get into the investment bank and figure out how money really worked. Got a job as a T-boy, ended up as a stockbroker, figured out that, all right, we're here just to sell stocks. It doesn't matter whether it's wrong or right. Ended up in the City of London, work as a market maker, realized that our job is to manipulate the prices of shares. And when we have institutional traders, our job is to find the retail to dump it onto. I then started working in corporate finance at the investment bank and realized that this whole process of financializing and securitizing companies means that you end up becoming a cog in a wheel of what I call a financial industrial complex.
Right.
And in fact, finance is used for subordination, almost like a blackmail leverage operation like we've seen. Also that war is a racket. often when you're writing business plans around where war zones are going to be, where war zones aren't going to be, it turns out that these financial institutions have a significant degree of influence in it. So that was my corporate career.
Now you said something really powerful there, and I want to, before you go further, I want to talk specifically about your experience, because there is an experience that the average American, or not even just American, people around the world know about how financial systems work. But then you were deeply embedded in seeing how things operate behind the scenes. So
behind
behind the curtain.
Who's the Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, that's what Rex and I want to understand specifically, and the average person. What's really happening behind scenes that people misunderstand?
Yeah, so I talked about this concept of a financial industrial complex, and it consists of different institutions that plug together in order to turn all companies all investors into as much subordination as they possibly can. So firstly, you know, we all know that banks, retail banks, their Wizard of Oz skill is that they get to create fiat currency. So every time they issue a loan, they actually create, they create new money, new fiat currency. The vast majority of fiat currency is created by a retail bank. The problem is that it has interest on top to be repaid. And so when you need to repay that interest, you either invest it in a productive asset that goes up in value, or you find someone else to take on the debt. Effectively, retail banking is a debt-based Ponzi scheme. And because it's a Ponzi scheme, it is guaranteed by the central bank. So the banks take the risk. They get to create the fiat currency. They get the cheapest interest rates. And then they're able to effectively turn every individual into a collateralized debt obligation, every company into a financialized and securitized debt-dependent, subordinated product, as it were, where they can control board seats and then inflict policy as a portfolio. And of course, the end game is to bail out everything onto the government. And so the government is simply a piggy bank for this corporate interest that they're building into products. They control fiat currency, and then they manage a portfolio in order to effectively control all the assets, you know, the gold, the hard assets, the shares, the debt, the equity, the derivatives. This whole complex is built together. But the end game is to turn every individual into a debt product, yes. Turn every corporation into an equity that you can borrow against, so you have more debt, therefore you become subordinate to. And every government is to dump all of the debt on, but have a facade that they're in charge. And so most people think they're voting between left and right, and there's a president making decisions. In reality, they answer to their lobbies, and the lobbies are all part of this financial industrial complex. And it's a pay-to-play auction prostitute system where effectively their job is to create a narrative on in front of what they're doing for their lobbies. The end of that cycle, because it is a Ponzi scheme, you effectively end up with all the debt on the government, and then you completely asset strip the country, and then you use war as a mechanism for doing a global reset, and you start to hedge your next location.
Well,
effectively how the system works.
Let me ask you about that global reset, because the thing that really enlightened me when we had you on is I was asking you the question of, like, why would Trump do these things? Why would he spend this money? Why would he potentially go to war? It doesn't make sense. It just degrades American power. But you explained to me quite eloquently how really he's ushering in the multipolar world, and there are bigger forces at work. So what's the runway for this current failed fraudulent system? Like you say, how are they, like me and Tim have talked about many times in the gray area, how are they going to roll all that debt up? What's the new financial system going to be?
My transition here is, so if you think about it, you had these constructs were created in the Dutch Empire. So you had Dutch East India Company, the corporate interest. You had the Dutch Central Bank, which created the debt-based Ponzi scheme. And then you had the Dutch government through the creation of the bond market, which was to assume all the debt. Eventually, they built a military force, and they ended up getting very, very inefficient and then outsourcing their shipmaking and naval fleet technology to the Brits. So then the Brits kind of ended up with the Bank of England, the British East India Company, and the and the government ended up being bankrupted. And so you had that construct. Then the transition happened to the American empire. So you had a couple of central banks. Then you had the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve set up the debt-based Ponzi scheme. And effectively, it was enforced by the fact that America had a massive manufacturing base. And because it had the manufacturing base, which previously the Brits had, which previously the Dutch had, you enter into a couple of wars and America supplied all the weapons, manufactured all the weapons, and then created financial contracts to rebuild the rest of the world that was being destroyed by the bombs. So then you enter into a strategic tension. You have two ideologies funded by the same sides. In fact, you had three. You know, Hitler was funded by Wall Street. The Federal Reserve was created by Wall Street and European bankers. The Reichsbank, the German central bank, had the very same brother that was the governor of the Federal Reserve on the German central bank. And also through the Bolshevik Revolution, you also created the Soviet Union and communism. And so Wall Street funded all of those. So you have three ideologies. You enter into a Cold War. You manufacture a narrative that justifies war and rolling over of debt. You have the Cold War. We're taking on the commies. We are the capitalists. Meanwhile, you're subordinating all of that debt onto the individuals, and everyone's going deeper and deeper into debt. But eventually what happened is America went bankrupt in 1971 after the Vietnamese War. And so America defaulted on its debt by saying you can no longer convert your dollars into gold. That was the promise after World War II. They said to everybody, stop converting your currency to gold, convert it to dollars at the IMF, and at the IMF, you'll be able to convert it to gold with us. And so effectively in 1971, America defaulted. We created this fiat currency debt-based standard. And what happened then? We started to transition the manufacturing base away from America and over to China. So we had globalization. We had financialization being the tool because the government debt was no longer constrained by gold. And so the debt ballooned after 1971. And the entire American economy just became a product for the investment banks, the retail banks, the asset managers, the central banks, until eventually you hit the stage where we are right now, where you don't have another country to transition to, because really, you know, American, European, that Dutch, British, American thing was a continuation. But a transfer of power through the central bank.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to clarify specifically is like, you know, China is trying to step into that new power role, but not everybody completely trusts China, specifically even in the West and not even all of the Asian countries, which is why you have BRICS. No, like, is that the second option for the polar world? Cause you've got America that's on one side and then you've got BRICS on the other side, right?
Yeah, so what you have right now is effectively this whole economy that was built in the post-World War II era on the military-industrial complex, but got financialized and securitized by the financial-industrial complex. Let's call it FIC and MIC for simplicity. So the FIC became more powerful than the MIC once you had the 1971, the financialization. And the FIC only cared about profit maximization for its portfolio of companies. And it managed to get everyone to contribute their pension so that they were managing everybody's assets. All the insurance premiums were being contributed. They co-opted the education system for their portfolio. You know, the colleges became money laundering organizations. And effectively you built this whole complex around FIC being in control. And so once you made all those companies public and you burdened them with debt, you created a bit of a power struggle. Effectively, the military-industrial complex, their job was to prop up the dollar. So once they exited the gold standard, we had the assassination of King Faisal in Saudi Arabia when there was a war between Israel and the Arab states. That led to Saudi doing an oil embargo in 1973 that led to stagflation. but it also led to the assassination of King Faisal. Then a secret club, Safari Club, was set up by George Bush, which was a network of intelligence agencies that later led to 9/11 and various other operations. Right. But you created the petrodollar, where effectively, because you no longer had gold, you would use the military to enforce the world onto this petrodollar. And Saudis would agree to lend all of their dollars back to the US government. And then as long as people would accept treasuries as collateral and people would buy those bonds and treasuries, then you entered into this Ponzi scheme continuing to the point where we are right now. Just to give you an idea of how that works, and then we can go into BRICS. The way this actually works is currently the average interest on the US debt right now, approximately 40 trillion, approaching 40 trillion, is 3.3%. In order to keep the Ponzi scheme alive, you have to, America has to have a growth rate above 3.3%. If you don't have a growth rate above the average cost on the debt, then you enter into the unwinding of the cycle, which would be a recession and a depression. Every time that happens, they need to find a new way of printing money in order to try and stimulate growth. One of those is fund the military industrial complex, create war. But the problem is with that is it extracts wealth from the average American person because they end up with the debt and the company ends up with all the profits. And so in order to keep the Ponzi alive, you have to extract all the assets from the average person, excuse me, and the economy becomes a mechanism for rolling over. Now you have to have growth above the average cost of the debt. What's happening right now? In this global reset where all energy and 50 different supply chains are being renegotiated, the projected growth rate for America is approximately 2% this year and 1.7% next year. At the same time, the 10-year treasury and the 30-year treasury is spiking, not as much as the rest of the world, but it's spiking up to dangerous levels, 4.5% and 5%. Wow. So now you need to roll over $7 trillion of debt at either 4.5% or 5%. The only solution to that was what Trump tried to do. He tried to regime change the Federal Reserve and enforce low yield bonds on the short term by effectively dumping them on Americans. So the largest foreign lender to the UK, to the US government right now is Cayman Islands, which is the hedge funds. So what he tried to do is he tried to force interest rates down artificially low, you know, by regime changing the Fed. And then they could be dumped on American people and American pensions, and you could subsidize the demonetization.
What's going to happen
of this program?
What's going to happen because of this action or attempted action?
Well, effectively, that's all gone wrong. So now we enter into an inflationary cycle because this war was meant to be short. It looks like the IRGC put up a bigger resistance than anyone imagined was possible.
We're going to cover that.
So now you won't get the short-term rates down. The long-term rates are rising. Oil prices are going up, so you've created a supply shock and inflation, so you can't get those rates down. And growth is going to go down at the same time as unemployment. That is an absolute disaster. I do not want to reiterate how bad things are going to get from here. I'm not one to say doomerism. I've always believed they could keep this Ponzi scheme going for quite some time. But the growth rate is going to be significantly below the average interest rate, which means that the only solution here is to print more money than COVID, more money than long-term capital management, more money than the global financial crisis, and experience the same economy of the 1973.
Well, Simon, here's my issue with all of that, right? Like Americans have been paying this bill, and not just Americans around the world since 2022 when since the COVID era where they printed $6 trillion already, right? We saw that hit our bottom line. And now I'm seeing these situations play out to where the oil's in play. People think they're trying to play 4D chess and they don't understand that you can't control prices the same way that you can control a lot of other things.
We just say we can do whatever we want.
Right. Basically. So now we look at it like, okay, gas prices is one thing. You've got diesel and fertilizer. Those things play out. And all of these inflationary costs keep stacking up for the average person. So what I really want to highlight, like, what is the immediate impact to the average person outside of just kind of these higher level breakdowns? Because people want to understand, like, what am I going to see in terms of what things are going to cost me? Because we're only seeing like the initial inflection point. We don't know what that
biggest
looks like.
Biggest impacts on people.
Yeah. Let's talk about those because I want to understand those.
Yeah. So I think, you got to break the world into region, but let's focus on America. So, America immediately, you will have the lowest gas price increases of most of the world because you are energy independent. However, it's going to be significantly more expensive. These gas, like, you know, WTI oil is slightly below the price of Brent crude, which is slightly below the price of Oman, you know, Brent crude as well. So now we've disjointed all the oil markets. However, in order for this growth rate to continue without inflation, America needed oil to be approximately $40. As a sweet spot. It also needed interest rates to be significantly lower. So what does that actually mean? Well, immediately, you have an impact on the gas prices. Right prior to this war, there was a hot print, PPI, Producer Price Index. The Producer Price Index is the cost at which things are produced in America. CPI is the Consumer Price Index, the average price of goods for the consumer. When you get a hot PPI, it tends to mean in 3 months you'll have a hot CPI. So prior to this war, you had 3% PPI, which was up from about 2.4%. So already inflation was turning around. Then we had this hot print. Now we had the oil price shock. So you got gas prices at 4%, 30-year interest rates at 5%, which translates into mortgage rates at 7%. 10-year yield is set in credit card debt, auto loan debt. And so you've got real estate interest on mortgages that need to be refinanced. If you refinance, you're refinancing closer between 6 and 7%. So everyone that is in debt right now, if they need to refinance, their debt is going up. The cost of goods are going up. The cost of gas is going up. And then when that energy penetrates through the economy over the next 3 to 6 months, the price of everything is going up. Now, what is it going to go up to? It can only go up to an unsustainable price where it has demand destruction, i.e. all your money is gas. Excuse me. All your money is gas. All your money is interest on debt, your rent, your mortgage. And if you're already on the edge, expect things to get significantly worse over the next 3 months. That's baked into the equation today. That is even if the Strait of Hormuz opens today. If this stays on for another month or two, you're talking about a depression worse than what we experienced in the 1930s. The reason for that is because America, saying that it's insulated, is complete fallacy. It's propped up by the petrodollar. What's happened to the Gulf countries? They're no longer investing. Yeah. Where did all the growth come last year? All the growth came from the AI and data centers build out. That was two markets, the private credit market and Gulf money. Gulf money closed. Private credit closed. What else does it need? What else did AI need? Cheap energy.
Yes.
There's no way that ChatGPT can do an IPO this year at these prices. No. So now you've destroyed the IPO market, the private credit market, the oil market, the energy market, the bond market. And that comes into the stock market.
It's like we got 1983, we got dot-com bubble, and we got the housing crisis, and we got the Iraq war all rolled into one. We're going to get into the war with you on the next segment. Both me and Tim have a lot of questions. Want to ask you about the Strait, want to ask you about Trump, want to ask you about China, want to ask you about Iran, ultimately all of these things. Thank you so much, Simon Dixon. We're taking a break right now. We'll be right back with the news.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us.
Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. Don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15, 20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. Now, I've been telling you this for decades, so they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research, the human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information that the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer, but they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document the potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. So we've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com if you're a VIP member for 50% off, regular customers 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation, total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our ultra methylene blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
On your morning drive, getting your morning coffee, walking your dog, working out, whatever it is, we're just so happy that you chose to spend this time with us. And really key geopolitical analysis and Bitcoin early adopter, Simon Dixon. We wanted to ask Simon, I wanted to ask you specifically on real world overt actions that are taking place in real time right now that we thought we'd never see. The Strait of Hormuz is closed. And every day we hear that it's open, that they're letting ships through as a sign of tribute, but we all know that's not true. So what's your take on the current crisis right now? Are they going to be able to keep the strait closed, the Iranians? Are the Americans going to be able to open it with Israeli help? Are Russia and China going to step in? Your thoughts?
Yeah, the strait is closed. Unless you are willing to price oil in the Chinese yuan, expel the Israeli embassy and the U.S. embassy from your country, then Iran will open you and allow shipments through. How is that enforced? So Iran is effectively a economy within a country. Think of IRGC as a faction of power, and underneath that, there is a government called the Iranian government.
Right.
Effectively, the Iranian government voted in parliament that the strait can be closed. The IRGC is a militarized force within Iran that has access to, you know, the banking system, the ports, the military, various other infrastructure. They said that no one is allowed to pass the strait. And then the insurers came along from Lloyd's of London and said, we won't insure anyone to go through the strait. So that closed the strait. You can't be insured. And how is that enforced? Well, the IRGC effectively for the last 40 years has built an underground structure in a ginormous natural fortress called Iran that's surrounded by mountains, where deep in the ground they have infrastructure for both a nuclear civilian energy program as well as a drone manufacturing operation.
But I hate to interrupt you, Simon, but I got to tell you the truth right now. Lindsey Graham says that we have commandos that can go down there and take the uranium. And because Mark Levin says it's true, it must be true. And this is the thing that we've covered numerous times on the show. Yeah. I mean, we've showed the footage. It's publicly available. They brag about it. They have these giant underground missile cities, missile factories, the same with the drones, the same with everything. We look at that right on the screen.
Well, here's my
They've been prepping for 20 years.
They have been prepping for 20 years. And my thing is they talk about estimates. They're like, we know they have these capabilities. We know that they can do these things. I'm like, how do you 100% know that you are being certain about that? Like they don't even leave room for them being wrong in these situations. So I think we've vastly seen the underestimation of Iran's capabilities. But I want to ask you, Simon, like who actually holds the cards? Because you've seen, the U.S. has their own set of demands, which were pretty fair in my opinion with the 15-point peace plan. And then Iran has their own set of demands. So who really actually holds the cards to enforce, you know, one side or the other?
I don't know if that peace plan is fair. What's your take, Simon?
Yeah. So effectively, you got to think of America not as America, a sovereign country. To get to the understanding of the world, you have to understand that through the process of financialization and securitization, America is controlled by lobbies. And those lobbies are broken up into different interests. The most powerful lobby is the financial industrial complex. Then you have the military industrial complex. You also have the technical industrial complex, big pharma, you know, and then affiliated ones like AIPAC is more affiliated with Israel. Israel is a destabilization campaign where the military industrial complex makes loads of money through war and the financial industrial complex makes money through propping up the petrodollar. And so what you have to think about here is that in terms of America has a what's called a build back better model, and they're trying to implement it. What that means is you use the military in order to destroy a country and destroy infrastructure and subordinate leadership, install puppet governments, do color revolutions, destroy currency, engage in financial weapons of mass destruction, and just subordinate a country so that you can get access to the resources to come back into the consumption debt economy in America.
Some would call that terrorism. And we saw this debate with Dave Smith and Adam Sosnick, and Adam Sosnick gets his panties all in a twist because Dave calls the United States the biggest state sponsor of terrorism. And we pointed out a lot. We talk about Cuba and the various embargoes and, of course, the sanctions on Iran. We engage in economic warfare for decades on these countries. And I think that's the valuable perspective you bring here, is talking about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is no other word for it. I guess a nuance, if we want to get into the technicality, is that terrorism is officially, you know, normally for political goals. In America, it's for corporate goals. And so you're effectively renting out the U.S. military to get you resources so that Chevron and Exxon can profit from them. And then obviously the American people pay for it.
Mm. Yes.
And so what the idea here is that you increase the bond market, which benefits the banks. Americans end up with the interest and the inflation. And that is all funneled back into resources that are needed to prop up the U.S. stock market. The U.S. stock market is currently 92% owned by the top wealthiest 10%. And so it's massive wealth extraction, the more war that happens. And then what happens once the war is over, you do the build back phase. So you get oil contracts, energy contracts, resource contracts. You know, in the case of Afghanistan, you got 20 years of military contracts. You got the revival of the CIA drug trafficking routes in order to get the, you know, continue the opium wars, as it were.
Right.
And you replace the Taliban with another version of the Taliban that would let the drugs get in. And so, you know, but all of this is wealth extraction. $2 trillion dumped on the American people. Trillions of dollars of profits for American private corporate interests.
What is your prognosis for the war? When does this exactly end?
Yeah. So what actually happened is it went into that phase where they're now destroying the assets in order to try and negotiate a new map of the world. And that map is being set by the financial industrial complex. Now, what you had from that is you had a resistance from the forever war model in the Middle East. To simplify it, the forever war model was you needed Israel to continually agitate war. You then needed USAID, CIA, and covert operations to fund militia groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. You then needed Iran that was always a threat against Israel. So you have a narrative of strategic tension. You have death to America, death to Israel. And then they have a private economy that funds various resistance around Israel, Hamas, Hezbollah, Houthis in Yemen. And you have constant strategic tension where there's always the justification for printing trillions of dollars and build, you know, get in, pushing the forever war model that props up the petrodollar by having allies like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, you know, UAE, and the Gulf countries. But now you want to try and like, you know, now we want to transition to what I think the financial industrial complex is doing, which is multipolarity. What that means is effectively all now America is an energy exporter. China is funding all the Gulf sovereign wealth funds by purchasing their oil and gas. And the Middle East effectively. Through their sovereign wealth is able to get significant influence over American foreign policy. And so you've had this massive disruption, this global reset that basically is pushing Europe into America through energy dependency. And then the rest of the world is being propped up by Russian energy and China's manufacturing base, which requires the removal of U.S. bases in the Middle East. It requires normalization between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and it requires the end of the apparatus that makes the forever war model possible, which is Israel and the Greater Israel Project, IRGC, death to America, death to Israel, and then the radical evangelical Christian neocon Zionists within America that need to be re-educated. So they're going through a re-education camp right now to understand what Israel actually is. Take those three factions out and you no longer have the forever war model and you move the Middle East. Basically what's happening is you're, instead of the Middle East, which was a colonial term, you're looking from London, you're looking over to the East and you see the middle of the world. You're returning it to what it was before, which is West Asia. So you're going to have Gulf countries, Iran, all aligned with China. And whose plan is this? This is 100% China's plan, which is why it has to be over. It was meant to be over in April when Xi Jinping and Trump were meeting. That meeting got delayed by 15th to 15th of May. If we continue with the Strait of Hormuz closed until the 15th of May, the price of oil will be $200. We'll have demand destruction on a scale we've never seen before. You've taken off 20% of the world's oil. the entire consumption economy requires that 20% to come back online. That's the equivalent of switching off the entire American economy in one go and wondering what the impact of the world will be.
Well, here's the thing, Simon. Somehow, you know, you listen to the rhetoric that comes out of the White House. We talk about like, well, it doesn't matter if the strait is closed. America's releasing oil reserve. We'll supply the rest of the world. And the thing that I've tried to highlight specifically is not all oil is created equal, right? You've got different types of oil, light crude oil. You've got heavy crude oil, which is the stuff that comes from Venezuela.
Diesel.
And like, it's not the same equation. Now, I've seen a lot of the spaces that you and Suleiman have been doing lately where you guys are up to date. You're seeing current events. You're seeing all the things that are playing out.
The state of the war.
The state of the war specifically. What is the kind of one or two major things that you're seeing currently as of the last, let's say, 24, 48 hours that you see developing even beyond the context and the history?
Yeah, so the price of oil and the bond market are dictating the strategy that America is following. The second oil gets over $115, basically, Trump has to fire a weapon.
Yes.
The first weapon was just lying. We're at peace. We've done a deal.
And then
the market crashed back down. Oil comes back down. We're done. The second tool was they got everyone to drain their strategic petroleum reserves. That's happening naturally anyway because the world is in an energy crisis. I'm on an island right now that has run out of diesel. Our supply chains are breaking. And we're getting ready with generators and how to do everything through alternative means.
Really?
Effectively, we could become Cuba because Cuba knows that, you know, they had to turn to biofuels if this continues. Okay. Now, America can pretend, yes, we are energy independent. Yes, we have the energy that we need. But remember what the difference is. Russia has nationalized oil. America has privatized energy infrastructure. Who does this benefit? A few companies. Who's paying the debt? The Americans.
Well,
who does it benefit in Russia? The country.
Hold on. Just a moment. Let's get that Trump tweet back up. I'm going to read this to you, Simon. I want your opinion of what the dear leader is saying right now. Donald Trump, all these countries that can't get jet fuel because the Strait of Hormuz, like the United Kingdom, which refused to get involved with the decapitation of Iran. I have a suggestion for you. Number one, buy from the U.S. We have plenty. And number two, build up some delayed courage. Go to the Strait and just take it. You're saying, just go. You can do it. Just go take it.
You got it, man.
You'll have to start learning how to fight for yourself. The USA won't be there to help you anymore, admitting defeat already, as you're kind of talking about, just like you weren't there for the U.S. Iran has been essentially decimated. The hard part is done. Go get your own oil. What do you think of that lunacy?
Okay. People think that Trump is a lunatic if you think he works for the American people. If you know the corporate interests he works for, he's actually doing a perfect strategy for them.
Okay.
He's pumping up the price of oil. He's burdening the American people with debt. He's resetting all the energy negotiations. And what is he doing? There are three things. So prior to this, we were weakening the dollar. The dollar was getting weaker and weaker and weaker. That was needed because American needed to get independence from China's manufacturing base. Now, since the war, the dollar's blown up through the roof. That means that America's going more and more dependent upon China. It's reversing the rebuild of the manufacturing base because the dollar's strengthening. You know, so we've reversed that trend. Now, what props that up? The euro dollar, the petrodollar, and the Japan carry trade. So by putting Asia into an energy crisis and pushing them towards Russia to solve that crisis, and BRICS effectively, then that's the perfect way of achieving that. And then you push Europe into an American dependency for that energy. You split the world up into, you know, the hemispheres. In order to get that, what do you need to do? You need firstly an inflationary cycle and then either a recession or a depression. So the way you do that is you get the inflation up. You then have demand destruction. That means things are unaffordable. everyone stops consuming and you push the price, basically the demand for oil down. So you've taken 20% of the oil offline. Now you need to get what price of oil gets demand destruction. And demand destruction means recession, depression, unemployment, and then you can get inflation down just by destroying the economy effectively. You need to make up for 20% of oil. So you've got to get oil up to about $200. So you need to be crazy. And then you need to break the, you know, effectively break the euro dollar for after the reset, break the petro dollar, and break the Japan carry trades, because Japan, through the 0% interest rates, were funding the US debt. So if you really want, you know, after this war is over, the only way to get the price to fix this right now is to crash the price of oil and get bond rates down. The only way to do that is for Trump to reach an agreement with Iran. And Iran effectively can carry on forever because it can keep the strait closed. There's only two countries that are economically insulated. The two countries that were sanctioned, Iran and Russia.
Yes.
So they already are completely insulated. You know, they all they need is one thing, for China to buy their oil.
And the Russians are just rolling around in money now. I mean,
for 760 million, baby.
18, about to be 19 sanctions packages passed in the U.S. alone. And then you look at Europe and all their efforts, and all that's out the window. And you look at just how big of a crisis this is. They had to throw that. They had to play that card.
Well, and the way I hear you describing it, Simon, like this is all part of a greater plan. And while I will agree with you on certain parts of that, I'm like, there's no possible way in my mind that, you know, someone like Trump and all the rest of the people who are behind the scenes are this calculated that they can take into account all the butterfly effects
in the
chain,
though,
in the chain reactions. Because here's the thing, if oil goes up to $200 a barrel, I don't think we know how that turns out. And because the world is so much more interconnected now than it ever has been in history, no one actually truly knows what the ripple effect looks like.
Well, and what's the timeline on top of that to make a deal? Like, what does that look like? Because you talk about the price of oil spiking. I mean, what if this goes on for another 6 months, God forbid?
Yeah, what happens if it goes on for 6 months?
Yeah, I'm really glad you said all those things, because there's a few things that people confuse around me trying to explain things and people interpreting it through their own lens. This is not Trump's plan. This is not Q. This is not trust the plan. This is not a genius. You know, Trump is the press secretary for his lobbies in Greater Powers.
He's the manager of the Burger King. Now,
Exactly. Now, do the Greater Powers, financial, industrial complex, technical, industrial complex, military, industrial complex, have a plan? Yes. They hedge for every outcome. They use derivatives market. They launch military operations. They try and get the resources. They have a business plan around the Build Back Better and the Forever War. And they know that if you can usher in law changes for a technical, Orwellian, technocratic surveillance state nightmare, then they've hedged every outcome. If this ends up in civil unrest, then the technical industrial complex creates a police and surveillance state. If they manage to achieve peace in the Middle East and get a deal, then the financial industrial complex gets all the Build Back Better contracts. If this all fails, and IRGC resists to the point where, you know, this goes out of control, then you effectively have the forever war model and you rebuild all these military contracts. So mass weapons are being sold, you know, for defense, missile interceptors. And so BlackRock, as it were, State Street and Vanguard, the asset managers, they're okay, whatever happens. Now, you are right. Once you hit a point of $200 oil, you hit massive demand destruction. What is the model when you have demand destruction? Exactly what they did during the Great Depression of the 1930s. You consolidate wealth, just like the 2008 financial crisis. Get a big print, socialize the losses, privatize the gains, send all the small businesses bankrupt, send the individuals bankrupt, and try and put them on some kind of universal basic income.
No, you're 100%
right. There is a three-tiered strategy.
FDR
so
did
whatever
that.
The outcome yes. is, they're going to concentrate wealth in the West. Mm. What is the resistance against that? This is the irony of the whole thing. Who's really draining the swamp right now? The factions of the IRGC that we would call the hardliners. They're resisting against the plan. They're taking out the US military bases. They're effectively pushing the Gulf countries away from the Epstein class over towards, you know, China and BRICS.
Right.
And they're, you know, and they're effectively fighting, for that multipolar world, as it were.
In that spirit, they are draining the swamp. Yeah.
They are actually draining the swamp. They are taking on the deep state. Remember, the dollar is backed by the deep state. If you break the deep state, you break the Japan carry trade, the petrodollar, and the eurodollar, which means that America is shrunk into a regional power. And so taking on the deep state is what props up the dollar. And IRGC are taking on the deep state. Where does IRGC get its power from? Obviously from Russia and China. They're getting intelligence fed through. They've got asymmetric weapons set up with drones and missiles that make essentially big, expensive equipment that the US military were profiting from irrelevant. Now, of course, you can inflict damage on them. But what happens every time you hit an infrastructure? You push the price of oil up. Now, who benefits from the price of oil and gas going up? Russia as a sovereign state, Iran as a sovereign state, and American private big oil, big LNG, and those, and the World Economic Forum agenda that wants a technocratic surveillance state where you will own nothing and be happy. Trump is delivering it for them to perfection. And the reason I think he's a blithering idiot is because they don't know what's going to happen. He doesn't know what's going to happen. And he's being told what to do next. And he's trying to communicate that.
They very clearly, they run these people. They're all empty suits. It's like you said, like he's the press secretary. In reality, I compare all these people to like managers of various fast food restaurants. And they may be the person that gives the checkout. They may be the person in the photo with the apron. But we all know the truth. We know the reality. They work for the people with the money. And I think that's what you so excellently break down. Because when we talk about these things, ultimately, we could talk about missile systems and destroyed interceptors and destroyed planes and destroyed U.S. bases and all of the nitty gritty. But in reality, it's all in service to this multipolar world that's being built around us. I think you're one of the best at breaking that down. I really appreciate you coming on here with
us. Yeah, we've only got like a minute here left, but where can people find you? Because there's a lot of information that you come out with every single week. You've got great spaces that you're in. You've got great podcasts that you're a part of. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so I go through these very long, you know, play by play, monetary transaction by monetary transaction in Bitcoin tech, macro and geopolitics every Friday. It's like a 3-4 hour marathon. I break it down into AI on my blog, simondixon.com, if you've only got 10-15 minutes. And then I'm always on X and giving live spaces. And giving live minute by minute play as we go through this. Fortunately, you know, Bitcoin made me financially independent. And I'm trying to get as many people as sovereign as possible. So sovereign countries, sovereign companies, sovereign individuals. And the real undertone here, which we didn't get to cover much, is what are you going to do to prepare? So hopefully we could come back, do another show or something.
Yes, 100%.
Because 100%. What really is important is you, your family, your community, because you can understand these big pictures. But right now we are in a, this is already a crisis. And if the strait is opened every single day, it's not opened, it's going to get worse and worse and worse.
You are a gentleman and a scholar. Simon Dixon, we love you. Thank you.
Let me do this. The folks at Bigly about 7-8 months ago came out with this top of the line Faraday cage backpack with all these special pockets, super high quality. I'd previously bought a bag for myself personally like this, similar brand, $400 or $500. The problem was they only got 500 of these. Well, guess what? They got a couple thousand of them finally in. It took 7-8 months. It's a $600 value, just the bag, for $249, but guess what comes in it? America First Faraday bag, America First Tactical Trench Knife, it's badass, America First T-shirt, MK Ultra Atomic Defense Supplements, Shilajit Gummy, Shilajit Capsules, Irish Sea Moss Capsules, Warcry Premium product, and more. And VIP members get it for $199. Also, as you can now read in the newspapers, the Texas receiver is saying he's not going to pay the rent or the bills. So you ask, when are we going to shut down? Tomorrow? 2 weeks from now? I'm going to just wait till the lights turn off, okay? You'll probably see InfoWars go down the site. You see streaming shut down. Once we can't do it, we have the All Shows Network built at Big Leon's, and I'm going to go over and do it there. But I'm going to ride this horse till it dies. I'm going to ride this race car till the engine blows or the wheels come off. Or I crash into the embankment. I ain't giving up. I'm riding this horse till I win or I lose. And then the media's like, oh, he's finally going to lose. Oh, yeah, all right. I am the InfoWar. Our listeners are the InfoWar. And we got a whole line. Here's the first one of a limited edition Veterans of the InfoWar t-shirts. Look at this. This is badass. And it's the troops on Iwo Jima raising the American flag with the InfoWars patch where the stars are. InfoWars lives forever. It is an amazing limited edition shirt. Look at that bad boy. And it funds this operation, but also the Alex Jones Network to keep us on the air. We need funds. We want to get more reporters back and expand, but we need your support. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Time. We're going to take you through a journey. We got guests, we got callers, we got everything. But more importantly than that, we got the deep dive with Tim Tompkins.
Deep dive. My favorite part of the segment. This is all I do outside of the show. I spend time researching, breaking things down, understanding specific topics.
High level causality.
To you specifically, the audience back at home. And today, what I want to talk about specifically is grocery prices, because we've talked about, you know, gas, diesel, Iran, those types of things. But one thing that you're immediately seeing within your household is the food prices.
Right.
And that all started during the COVID era. So we're going to cover specifically on why food got so expensive, because everyone's just like, well, it got so expensive. It's just the gas.
It's just what happens to
you. You guys are going to be shocked.
Yeah.
What actually is happening behind closed doors and behind the scenes. This is why I love doing these deep dives. So let's start with this price increase chart here on number one. And we're just going to show people what this looks like. So like if you look at it, it's in that folder. You know, eggs doubled. You had, if you've been to a grocery store, you've lately seen that eggs have doubled. You've got milk, has jumped, ground beef,
it's
butter.
$2.
Everything has essentially shot up. You were talking about bison beef the other day, right?
Yeah, well, the thing is, and here's something that we neglected to mention with Simon, but I think it's such a good point, and he kind of already covered it. Inflation never truly goes down. Right?
No.
The price doesn't go down, just the rate of the increase slopes.
It goes up. Sometimes it slightly decreases, but not anything meaningful, and it'll continue to jump up. So the official story is pretty simple. COVID broke the supply chain is what everybody's talking about. You had the bird flu that killed the hens. Companies had no choices but to raise prices on you guys. And the photo that I want is the first one that started the chart that shows what happened from COVID going on specifically.
Oh, that one's crazy.
No, it is crazy, and it's in that folder that has all the assets in order. And I linked it inside of the drive. So that's not the full story though. COVID is not the full story. While families were paying more, there was one egg company that was paying out $252 million to shareholders.
Nice.
$252 million, right? And that's a 40x increase in the dividends that they had the prior year. And that's during a crisis where they said, right, we have to increase egg prices.
Right.
So before we understand that, we need to actually understand who this actually hits. This is the chart. Perfect. Like,
increase all the food prices, food at home.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it, it starts off like 1 to 2% on average a year. That's what we've been consistently used to. And then you just see something happen after COVID and you're like, whoa, what? Just rapid increase where you're seeing like 10 plus percentage increase, and it's not coming down. You are completely right about this. Now we got to understand who it specifically affects. It affects the lower incomes, and let's pull up number two here. So when prices jump to 10 to 13% year over year, the impact isn't actually equal. It's actually wealthy families that aren't impacted as much. The people who are at the bottom of the tax bracket are the ones that it gets expensive for. So the simple question is like, do you see like how this impacts people, Rex? Like,
I see how it impacts people. To me, the thing this makes me think of is we have politicians that get elected every 4 years, and this continues to get worse. How these people couldn't be elected dog catcher?
No. Yeah, and this is what you're seeing, the have-nots and have-yachts.
Yes.
The have-yachts don't have to worry about the food going up. Anybody who's in that lower 20 percentile, they're the ones that are getting destroyed by this. Now, we're going to continue this deep dive. We're about to come here on a break, but you guys are going to want to stay tuned to understand the specifics.
We've got the best information for you available in the entire world here on the American Journal. We're about to continue with the deep dive. You're going to want to stay tuned. Want to remind you really quick, go to thealexjonesstore.com. We've got a promotion right now. Every subscription offer you get, every new product you sign up for, you get a free t-shirt. I'm rocking them. I'm rocking one right now. You want to get one for yourself, realalexjones.com.
I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra Methylene Blue. Blue.
I know. Blue. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. 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 I mean, this is just bonker town.
I know. I love it.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. Blue, blue, blue. I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up
about
it. Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
You're listening to The American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
We took this kind of 30,000-foot view with Simon, and now with Tim, we're looking at it under a microscope. And that's how you really got to do these things, both macro and micro arguments, as micro Mark Levin would tell you. Let's go back to the deep dive. Tim Tompkins talking about inflation.
Yeah, so with this food, you know, we got to understand two things here specifically. Most people don't realize how the global supply chain actually works, because over 60% of the vegetables that Americans are eating, the same stuff that you get at your table every time you eat, come from other countries. So a huge portion of that actually comes from Mexico. And we can pull up the picture of the Mexican imports of tomatoes, because tomatoes is a perfect example.
Right.
Showing how much the increase has happened over time. So you look at it, early 2000s, we start around 0.5 metric tons. And now we're crossing over 1.5, nearing 2, and that's going to continue going up. Now, why it matters is specifically because our food system is incredibly efficient, but efficiency also creates fragility. So let's go ahead and pull up this clip, because it's going to show you the pathway of a tomato, and it's number 5 here. And you're going to just see how long it takes from the tomato growing to how it ends up at your doorstep. When you go to the grocery store,
it's just like the gold in Africa. You know, it has to go through all different checkpoints. People got to get their taste of the money.
Okay, let's go ahead and roll that clip of the tomato supply chain.
About the journey of a tomato. They're often picked while they are still green. They're not ripe yet. Often picked by hand and then loaded into trucks. A tomato like this will often go into a sealed room where they are gassed with ethylene to ripen them. Ethylene is just a naturally occurring hormone that helps ripen these guys. And they want them to all ripen at the same time, right as they get to the grocery store. But we have a long way to go before we get to the grocery store. So they're pumped with this gas. And then if they're going into cans, which a lot of tomatoes do, they go through this industrial factory wizardry. But for the ones that are gonna end up like this, fresh, they They are on a truck headed north. They end up in a nearby city, probably the capital, Culiacan, in this big facility where they are sorted, chilled, and then put on big pallets. They get back onto a truck, which, by the way, all of these trucks are refrigerated. That's a big logistical challenge to make sure these things don't get too hot or cold. And now the truck is heading north. It gets to the U.S.-Mexico border. Look, this is where people go back and forth between the two countries, but over here is a special border crossing just for trucks. Our tomatoes are in one of these. It clears customs, and then it probably ends up at one of these transfer stations, where the trailer might be transferred on to another truck to an American driver who will take it from there. The tomatoes are now in the United States. Once in the U.S., they might be re-ripened and repackaged, and they eventually take a long-haul trip on America's freeways, ending up at a distribution center like this one in Illinois. Here, tucked into the endless expanse of farmland, is this massive building surrounded by cargo trucks. The tomatoes are unloaded, they're scanned for inventory, they're repackaged, and then they're back on the road, headed towards the grocery store. And I promise, I'm getting close here. Okay, we've arrived at the grocery store. This whole journey was 9 days, about 1,000 kilometers or 620 miles, and the tomatoes are finally stacked in the vegetable aisle, ready for you to buy a pound for $2, bring them home, chop them up, and throw them into a sauce. Boom.
Sounds like that's getting more expensive.
Yeah. And the reason why I showed you guys that video and why we're talking about a tomato is the tomato is just a personification of the larger chain in itself. And it comes across all the food groups, because let's pull up the graphic of that, showing the journey, and it'll be number 6 there. Let's pull up that image because I want people to understand how much the supply chain. Look at all of these points at which that tomato has to go through. And the problem here specifically, Rex, is at any point, if any of these systems break down,
right,
it creates a trickle-down effect. And that's the part that people understand.
Well, each one of these individual processes has become far more expensive than at the beginning of the war for a variety of factors.
Right.
Right.
Right. And there's multiple events. Any event can break one of these supply chain points at any point. So what here's a list specifically of some of the events that we've had that have impacted the person or the supply chain itself. You had COVID shutdowns that hit factories, trucking, packing all at once. You had the Texas freeze. I wasn't here for that, but I heard a lot about that.
Oh, things, the world ended here, bro. People were not prepared for ice.
Yeah. And you know, us in the Northeast were like, snow.
Well, y'all salt the roads. Okay. We don't salt the roads. No. They're liberals.
Being in Texas, I actually see why it is very dangerous. They don't do anything to the roads. But yep. You had the Texas freeze that destroyed the citrus crops. Mediterranean, they had a drought that made an issue with olive oil. Canada, they had a drought that ended up dropping the supply of canola oil. That hit your pocket. Indonesia, they did a ban on palm oil, and that also did something.
Really?
Then your favorite, Rex.
Okay.
Ukraine blew up wheat and fertilizer prices. You remember that one?
Yep.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of things along this path, including meat plants,
local
the attacks can reroute the global shipping, and the supply chain can get smashed from every different angle.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, we're just seeing more and more of that, and it's not just a local problem, it's an international problem. And Simon made the point of like, like we pretend to be energy efficient until we're really not, right? And until prices hit a point to where people here can't afford to be independent anymore, right?
Yeah. And again, all of these stack on top of each other. And here's the thing, guys. Companies cannot afford all the time to absorb all the cost.
Right.
And so that's why we hear the narrative that tells us, hey, Rex, our truck broke down. We had a big shortage of supplies. It's going to cost you a dollar more at the store as you go and pick up your tomatoes now. But that's only half of the story here. Okay. There are scenarios where you're seeing companies actually taking advantage of the crises themselves.
Oh, yes.
And this is the secret sauce, because no one else is covering this stuff. I have not seen anybody on a wide scale talking about this on their shows. So let's talk about this one scenario called the bird flu. Everybody knows about
that.
Let's pull up number 7 here on the bird flu egg prices, and we're going to show people what happened during this time period. Okay, you see that line in 2022? That is when they said the bird flu outbreak happened.
And they had to kill all those chickens.
They had to cull and kill all the chickens. And you probably heard the bird flu spreads, millions of hens get culled, egg shortages, and then it leads to price soaring. But here's the thing. Companies position themselves as victims of these natural disasters, just like these egg companies, right? And they told the public that they had to raise their prices, but what were you to expect? if you see a company struggling and they have to increase the prices.
Well, and it's because the companies don't operate with the goodwill of the people in mind. They operate purely off the profit basis. And it's like you talked about when the companies go public and they start accumulating the debt. I mean, their only interest is, well, let's say it gets 20% more expensive for them to get you eggs, right?
Yep.
Their only interest is to use that as an excuse to add 40% to their margin, right? Because they'll add the 20% it takes to cover and they add the 40% or 20%
they make money. It gets worse than that, because what you would expect is, if situation or crisis happens, you expect that stock to fall or right. for them to be affected somehow. Let's pull up number 8 that shows the biggest egg producer stock prices during that time period. This is going to shock you guys.
Oh, it goes
so
right.
So look
right
at 2022.
Along.
You would expect there to be like some drastic fall off on their stock prices, because this carried out for a while. But egg prices doubled, and then you see Cal-Maine's stock price actually skyrocket. It goes from $40 to $60. Rex, these numbers aren't adding up, are they?
No, they're not adding up at all. Well, they add up great for the people making the money, just not for the Americans. And here's the thing. People will call me, you socialist, you communist scum. Actually, no, I support what Teddy Roosevelt said. I support the Sherman Antitrust Act in breaking up these big monopolies, because these are monopolies. Yeah. Really, we examine this in every sector when we do these various deep dives. That is the common thread. These aren't supposed to exist this way in America.
Yes, you're 100% right. But wait, there's more.
It gets better?
It gets better. Let's look at this dividend payout, because the dividends is where you got to follow the money. So
right.
Corporations are required to file things. But you're seeing in 2023, the dividend payout is just skyrocketed.
Right.
I mean, and the dividend is going directly to the investors.
If you have to the moon.
Right. The only way you have dividends is if the company is profitable and is making a lot of money to where they can justify paying the shareholders.
Right.
So, again, your food prices go up, your egg prices specifically go up, with Cal-Maine owning a majority of the market in America, and everybody in the stock market is happy and making a bunch of money. Now, the other thing we need to look at is the cash flows itself. If we pull up number 10, we're going to look at where the actual filing happens, because public corporations are required to actually submit filings, and we can actually read some of this. That's going to be this.
Okay,
this
that's the document you want me to consult
and
read.
And
it?
We'll focus on this middle.
I'll read the middle bottom.
Not that one.
Not the bottom one.
This one. Yeah.
Okay.
And we're going to focus on the cash flows from financing activities.
Okay. We paid dividends totaling $252.3 million and $6.1 million in fiscal 2023 and 2022, respectively. As of June 2023, cash increased $233.7 million since May 28, 2022, compared to an increase of $1.7 million during fiscal 2022. So they 200x their profit, or 2000x? I'm not even sure what the multiplier is.
The multiplier on this... Let me see. What was the multiplier on this?
Because they made 1.7 the last year, and they got 252.3
million. Yeah, it's a lot. That's pretty much the
mucho
equation.
Grande.
And here's the thing. Going from 6.1 to 252 is a lot. And then here's the thing that...
But it doesn't sound like you're struggling now, does it, Tim?
No. And the best part that reveals that is actually the second part there. I'll read this. For the credit facility, because they have to reveal to the shareholders what they're doing with their
debt. Right, right.
They said, we had no long-term debt outstanding at the end of fiscal year 2023 and 2022.
Wow.
That is huge, guys. Companies normally take on debt when they're not able to have enough money to actually provide the services that they are doing. They're doing fantastic.
Yep.
They're doing fantastic.
Are you doing fantastic at home? do you want the government to actually work for you instead of these companies? Let's get some real leaders in charge.
Oh. And here's the thing. Let's do my screen share here, because I'm going to show you guys a chart, and we're going to look at the egg prices compared to the correlation of the Cal-Maine Foods dividend payouts, and we're going to show that, okay? So I've got a handy-dandy. Let me go full screen here. And you guys are going to take a look at this. This is something that I made on the gray area. So let's take a look at what's happening. Top is red. We've got the prices of eggs. This blue line shows Cal-Maine's dividend. So we're in 2021. Okay, no dividend payouts. Oh, we're hitting 2022. Whoa. Somebody's getting dividend payouts. The egg prices are increasing. Okay, now in 2023, it looks like egg prices are coming down. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. Something looks good. And then this is the inflection point here. This should shock you guys. Going into 2024 all the way through.
Wow.
Look at this.
Wow.
Look at this chart, guys. You are seeing, as your egg prices are going up, these people are making buku money.
They're making more and more cash off of you.
So now we can't even say specifically, how is it that we can blame the supply chain and we use these narratives? And then if you look at the supply of eggs themselves, because the supply, normally if there's less supply, we got Owen.
Dude, he drank like 10 eggs. Dude, what the, whoa.
Hey, he's better than me. I would throw up.
I'm not doing that.
I couldn't do that. But like going back to the point here is, let's look at the supply of eggs on number 12, because normally you would expect on a supply chain for, if there's less supply of something, then the price of that would be increased because it's demand and supply. But let's pull up the number 12, the supply of eggs. So when they told us in 2022 that the bird flu outbreak happened, you would expect there to be a significant drop off. The top line is what you need to pay attention to.
Right. And that's the supply, and it's pretty much constant.
It is pretty much constant between 600 and 700 million eggs.
Wow.
They lied.
Yes, they did.
They absolutely lied to you.
And it's right there in black and white. You can't argue with
it. You can't argue. So they're saying supply is at the same. Ooh.
Yeah.
I have a great idea.
Thinking time.
Let's make the American people pay more.
That's right.
You know, that single mom, she's not struggling enough.
Yeah. We're gonna take care of it now. Yeah, exactly. It's crazy.
We're gonna take care of it.
It's wild.
Help the people.
Oh man.
And here's the thing, Rex.
Go ahead.
Eggs are a staple food. Mm-hmm. It's not like you just went and said, we're going to do this to chocolate milk, which is a luxury. No, eggs is like in everything. It's a requirement for people
chocolate
to have.
Chocolate milk is also an essential. let's not get things twisted here, but go ahead. I take your point.
No. Yeah. Go ahead. That's the main point I wanted to make.
Well, the thing is we see it's a very stable supply. Maybe they take a 5%, 10% dip somewhere along the line, but they literally don't start getting paid out the shareholders until there's a crisis. And the worse the crisis gets, and the bigger the crisis gets, as we saw in the two inflection points, the original one and the one that's even bigger, as the American people have to pay more, as the American people get gouged and raped and pillaged over and over again, all these companies do is print and make more money because the government serves the financial industrial complex.
Yes, absolutely. You're right. Now, I want to just look at the numbers here. While, you know, you were struggling to get those eggs and you saw them at $8, let's pull up the dividends that the Cal-Maine director was making, because the CEO's gotta get his bread.
May his yacht sail beautifully.
This is what we call the have-nots and have-yachts. Let's read that part and highlight it.
Sure. I'll read the whole thing real quick. Cal-Maine's current CEO, Sherman L. Miller, Big Bucks Miller, that's what we call him, took in $1.1 million in total compensation for fiscal year 2023, 26 times the median employee income of $45,000. Additionally, Miller and other stockholders were awarded huge dividend payments. Oh, the real money. Thanks to Cal-Maine's record-breaking profits, thanks to the crisis they capitalized on, the company estimates that Cal-Maine's board chair and former CEO, Little Adolph B. Baker, who owns more than 150,000 shares, would have taken in over 800,000 of those dividends alone. So they're rolling in the money. Never go full Adolph, that's what we say.
It is just absolutely insane to see these things. You know, you look at the average CEO, the shareholders making more. Here's the thing, guys. We go back in history. We look at what happened during Reagan's time, because I like to talk about this because it's important. There used to be a chart, and I'll pull it up one day, where you see the breakdown of where companies stop sharing their profits with the people who are actually creating the increase in
Instead
productivity.
Of paying the workers, they pay the shareholders.
Right, because it used to be, hey, we're doing better, guys. Here's a bonus. Here, take this home. We appreciate the work that you're doing. Let's keep you for another 20 years. Somehow during the 80s, we said, Rex, you know what would be a great idea?
Tell me.
Instead of paying back the dividends to the people. Let's allow the corporations to buy their own stock and make it go higher.
Incredible. Infinite money hack. Let's do it. Who cares what our children or grandchildren will have to live through? Screw it. We'll be dead anyway. And that's the calculation. That's the secret. And that's why sometimes we love our older audience. Shout out to you. Sometimes we rag on the boomer generation a little bit is because, well, of course you're happy with the way the system runs. If it ran for you. It ran for you and you got to hijack or get onto all these different scams.
Don't you guys just love these deep dives? Ain't nobody's covering this stuff.
Yeah.
This is why we do this. I care about you guys.
And the key thing is like, this is all public information and we hope to be a jumping off point for you, the viewer, the listener, the audience out there. This is a family show. At the end of the day, we don't swear on here. We want you, your kids, your wife, your friends, everyone you know, we want them to get into researching stuff like this the way that we do because this is what's really fun, not the sports games. Not the gambling addiction, not that, whatever it is. What's really fun is being empowered by the information. And I know just from you starting doing the show, of course, I was always kind of inundated with media, but you're a very analytical guy. You're an engineer and your approach to doing the show, your approach to presenting this information to people is you want to show them, hey, this is what's happening. This is the system that was built. These are the pieces that were used to build the system. Maybe we should dismantle it or build something else, but these are the facts on the ground.
Yeah.
I love the deep dive. No one else does.
I'm loving it. And we're not even done here because we got to just understand, is this just one company or is there a pattern behind this?
There's got to be a pattern.
There's got to be a pattern. Now, let's go ahead and pull up the video of the CFO of Hershey talking about it because he admitted on an earnings call that he raised prices higher than inflation.
Right.
And they were not alone. Many of the S&P 500 companies actually did the same thing. And you see the pattern play across all of the corporations. So let's go ahead and roll this clip, okay?
The CFO of Hershey in 2023 said on an earnings call to the company shareholders, quote, pricing and productivity gains more than offset inflation and higher manufacturing and overhead costs. In non-Wall Street speak, that says we increased our prices well above what our increased costs were. Like our costs for sugar, cocoa, et cetera, have gone up, but we have been able to not only pass all of those costs on to consumers, but then some, increasing our profit margin. Hershey's wasn't the only company to say this. Virtually like the vast majority of S&P 500 companies said this. Frito-Lay and PepsiCo, for example, did the same thing where they said, we've been able to rapidly increase kind of our pricing actions is what they call them, which is these increasing prices.
So profits are soaring while a family of four who's surviving on a thrifty food plan is seeing their costs for food increase by 30% or more over the last few years. More and more turning to government programs. And so now our taxpayer dollars are going to help inflated prices to make shareholders rich. It's not a good setup. It's not a good set of incentives. It's not a free market. This isn't good.
It's not a free market.
What? Well, Rex, you see, this candy's good for you here.
Mom always told me I need my bone to be strong. That's why I used the fluoride toothpaste. She made me real intelligent.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. And they want to make you proud of being ignorant on these topics, on these scenarios, when it's literally out there in black and white. And here's the thing. We rag on mainstream media a lot of the time. They do good reporting like this. They tell you the truth. You just ignore it. And you want the chocolate bar.
And you want the chocolate bar. They know you want these things. And so, I mean, just the guts of these people to increase it beyond inflation just shows you the integrity.
Absolutely.
There is no longer integrity here in America, and that is my biggest problem here.
Well, let me tell you, there's one place where integrity still exists. We're going to come back with more of the deep dive on the next and final segment before the Alex Jones Show. You can go to thealexjonesstore.com for true integrity, for real American-made products, American-shipped products. If you want to contribute to honest American employment, if you want to get methylene blue or any of the fine T-shirts, apparel, or various supplements that we have, you want to go to thealexjonesstore.com. You are supporting American manufacturing and American business and American employees when you do this. I think that's such a key point to make. These products aren't made in a foreign country. They're not made in China. They're not shipped by foreign laborers. They're not stocked by foreign laborers. It's American business right here in Arkansas funding and sponsoring this operation. We're going to continue doing this phenomenal show for you, but I want to tell you right now, for every subscription that you get on a product, you're getting a free limited edition T-shirt right now. I've got one. I've been rocking one. I want to give a few out.
If I want one, man.
We're going to get you T-shirts, Tim. We're going to get you decked out in T-shirts. That's a promise, but we want to get the audience decked out too. So we want to remind you to subscribe and save, get that free t-shirt, get the deals, get the iodine for half off of your VIP. There's so many amazing things going on right now at the Alex Jones store.
Hey, what's that shirt that says the war keeps going? It had like Iraq, yes, and Iran. I want that shirt.
Yes.
Like, I kid you not. Like, if you can get me one of those, I will be
grateful. The Orwellian Iraq Iran war shirt. You gotta get it now.
I need
now.
That.
You
I'm gonna wear that.
That's a good purchase at thealexjonesstore.com. You want it now at thealexjonesstore.com.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it, I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public. That's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 million people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where it put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world, has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record, good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, I've been on this since 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I went and did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexjonesstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexjonesstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexjonesstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells, the methylene blue, and iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexjonesstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
I feel good. We love doing the American Journal. here from you guys. Tim's going to round out this deep dive with the critical information. But I want to let you know we're going to take your calls. So the number for that, if we can get that punched up on screen, is 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. We'll take a few of y'all's calls. We're interested to see what you have to say about the show. Tim, take it away.
Yeah, well, I'm interested to hear in the callers, what do you guys feel about the deep dives? How are we liking those? What did we think about Simon and some of the information that came out about that and the industrial, financial industrial complex, military industrial complex, those types of things. But let's get back to it because we got a little bit more. And as you guys have seen, the CEO of Hershey's was lying to everybody, told everybody, well, we increased beyond inflation numbers, which,
right.
Again, what else do we expect? But one thing we do also need to focus on here is the monopoly part. And we like to call these guys the big four, the meat industry. Can we pull up that image for people to see? Because here's the structure that makes it possible. Okay, you've got four companies that control 73% of beef, 67% of pork, and 54% of chicken. Okay, just look at this chart here. Now, Rex, what happens when we have monopolies?
When we have monopolies, the private citizen or the small business can't compete, and the monopolies get to set the price. They get to engage in price gouging and price rigging.
Right. And so we have this privatization and these big companies just buying up all the smaller competition. Because, Rex, it's not illegal for us to buy another company.
Right. And the company kind of mirrors what the government does. Whatever the government can get away with, the large company can get away with to a smaller extent.
And maybe we need to redefine what a monopoly actually is, because it seems to be the way that they're taking
it. Can only be one.
Yeah, yeah, it can only be one. But not if they're all colluding together as one amorphous entity.
We don't talk about that. Shut up. We don't talk about that.
They're gonna have the sniper trained on me when I get out of here.
They're gonna get us, bro.
Right. So I think that's the new one, because if all the corporations are talking together and they're conspiring behind the scenes to set the prices, then you're gonna see the same thing as a monopoly playing out in real time here. Now, there was a lawsuit that came out, and we can pull up that picture on number 16. And this isn't speculation. The poultry giants actually already paid millions in price-fixing settlements. So McDonald's has sued beef suppliers for collusion. Frozen potatoes and tuna industries also got caught for manipulating prices. And this is a wider industry behavior. And we can read a little bit of this. You can just read it off the screen.
Yeah, absolutely. Cargill settles turkey price fixing suit with $32.5 million payout. Cargill Inc. has agreed to pay $32.5 million to settle a class action lawsuit accusing the company and several other processors of conspiring to fix turkey prices. The agreement, filed on January 15th with the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Illinois, awaits court approval.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're going to sue people if you can clearly see that they're fixing prices, because it affects the company itself. It's pretty ironic to see McDonald's suing, though.
Sure.
I mean, they're pumping our bodies with, like, terrible chemicals, and they're like, well, you're fixing beef prices.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. They're all guilty, right? In various sectors of the American economy, we've been defrauded by our own companies. We've been taken advantage of by our own companies. This needs to change, and it has to stop, and it starts with awareness like we're doing.
It does start with awareness. And another awareness that you guys need to have is this isn't just mutually exclusive to the United States.
Right.
This is happening around the globe. And number 17 is going to show the world inflation. But let's pull up that chart. U.S. food inflation is real and it is painful.
And I'm just going to say it again. The price never goes down. The rate that it goes up only slows. So when they brag about 2% inflation, 3% inflation, just know they're expecting you to bear the burden of all the prior decades.
Yes. Now, let's look at this chart here. Who's number one?
Argentina.
I thought Malay
was going to fix everything.
183%, my guys. Oh, my Lord.
It's not even as bad as Gaza, apparently.
Yeah. Gaza, Palestine is behind at what? That's 115.
We've got Zimbabwe. We got 94%. South Sudan. Then at Turkey, we got 48%. I can't read that other one. We got 44%. We got Nigeria at 39. We got another one at 38. We got, I believe that's Argentina at 34. And then we got one other one at 27.
Now, I could be wrong. There are sources saying that it could be up to 200 to 300% food inflation in Argentina.
Really quick, let's get that graphic back up there on the screen. I just want to take a look at this because you see the massive lines and you're like, well, what is this? How can this even be real? And then you look, oh, the smaller ones, 39%, 27% Egypt, the 34% Argentina. That's 34% more expensive food year over year.
Yes.
That's world ending.
And guys, just to keep this in perspective, in the United States at our peak during COVID, we were seeing somewhere between 10 to 14%.
Wow.
And you felt that.
Yes,
so imagine being a citizen in that country where you're just trying to go to the grocery store and your eggs used to cost you, I don't know, $4, and then suddenly it's $8 the next day. Or
wow.
And it's just not sustainable. And as much as I like to complain about what it's like here in the United States, I look at these bigger pictures and I look at the wider world itself and I say, hey, it could be better. Now, that doesn't justify it, but it puts it in a perspective so that I don't feel so black-pilled all the time, like, dang.
Well, I got to come in with the black pill now.
Go ahead.
I got to do it. The thing is, because our standard of living is so much higher here, because the prices are so much lower, when those prices start to go up and once it reaches a terminal inflection point of which people can't deal with it anymore, that's how you get bedlam, pandemonium, panic, whatever word you want to use for it. That's how you get that mass reaction from the society. Now, look at my dad.
That's hilarious.
My dad, he's in the grocery store.
What is this video?
It's at Central Market. It's old B-roll. I love that. I reposted an edit of that to my ex. Look how classic he is. Look at that.
Now, we love old videos of Alex.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, this is pretty much it for my deep dive specifically. I wanted to just take you from start to finish because there's always hidden systems that we don't understand around the world. And this is the information that these corporations do not want you to know.
Well, what I was kind of leading into the break when you were coming back in the room, what I said is like, we took a 30,000 foot view with Simon. Now we're taking like under a microscope view with you. And then that creates a situation where you, the viewing and listening public, the audience out there, the American and global citizens around the world, you can take that information and then use that as a starting point for yourself to actually know what's going on. You can see the forest for the trees, which is actually a very hard thing to be able to do.
It is very hard. Guys, I spend hours, tens of hours doing research on each of these topics specifically because I do it for the love of the game and I care about the listeners.
Right.
And if you guys want to hear more about these and you want to catch more deep dives, I will be doing this on the American Journal regularly. I don't care how much effort it takes. I'm committed, but at the same time, we do this also on our own show.
Let's talk about gray area because we're live Thursday and Sunday from 7:30 p.m. to around 9:30 or 10:30 p.m. It's been a great hub for people to get connected with us. We're about to take calls here on the show. A lot of the callers from gray area have tried to call in as well on the American Journal, and we love that. But if you guys want to check us out, give us a shot. We're live Thursday and Sunday at 7:30 p.m. Give Truism Tim a follow. Give Gray Area Talks a follow on X and myself as well. If you're not already following, let's take calls.
Yeah, let's take calls.
Let's do it. Who do we have on the board today? I'm interested to see. I haven't seen the board yet for today.
And let's talk about what we want to ask the callers here today.
Sure.
There's a lot of stuff that we unpacked between just this deep dive and specifically some of the information that we had during Simon, but let's go ahead.
Sure. Let's ask these people, let's ask the dear viewers and listeners that are on the call what they want to see positive development out of the world, what they're looking forward to. Let's go a little white pill with that. Let's take call number one, Steve in Nevada. Steve, what are you looking forward to in the world? You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, guys. How we doing?
Pretty good.
Great, man. All right. This is what I was just talking to a good friend of mine. We started up a podcast that we're getting rolling with, Real American Patriots. And it's a pretty heavy name. I was surprised I could get it. Anyway, I was talking about, you know, trying to get the message out about trying to unite people and wake people up.
Okay.
And we've been hit with so much crap over the years, right? You know, like propaganda here. And, you know, once people start getting hit to one thing, you know, let's put this new thing together, new war, new this, new that. It's all BS. So what we're to the point now where I was just saying to my friend Mark, I said, you know, man, we're trying to get a positive message out. But at this point, this whole New World Order stuff that we've been talking about for a long time, falling in line with the whole Jewish prophecy, and you know the whole story, man. I don't have to tell you. Well, that's all good, but a lot of people still think that we're crazy, right?
Yeah. So what's your positive take? What are you looking forward to? I saw you watch the Jake Shields thing. Were you happy with some of the thoughts that I expressed on that program?
I thought it was great.
Awesome.
You know, I thought it was real, and it was a little bit shocking, I guess, for a lot of people because people are still in this kind of brain fog. Well, what I'm thinking here is that the message is, like, you guys are talking about, you know, prices and whatnot. I've been talking about this stuff with people, getting people's opinion just in supermarkets and stuff. Just people, you know, just walking by somebody, and I see somebody stop and look at, like, a thing of sugar or whatever. Say, I'm like, what do you think about this or that? Or do you notice how these prices are going boom, boom, boom here and there? And it's not like a normal cycle where
I totally agree. I think I see where you're going with this. Really appreciate the call. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so here's the thing, right? Like, I was at the grocery store. I was at the self-checkout and I was looking over the girl next to me and she's talking to me a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, you notice how they have these machines. So they don't have to employ people. They have these machines. So they're phasing everybody out. See, it's less expensive to pay the machine.
Bag your own stuff.
And then, you know, she doesn't want to have that conversation. Thank you, Steve from Nevada. Really appreciate the call. Let's go to four. Call number four, that's going to be Ian in Houston on the Iran war.
Yes, good morning, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Yeah, I was just calling, you know, you just gave us the prompt of what we're looking for in the world. And I hope that everyone understands, you know, one of the reasons I'm calling in, I've called in and talked to your dad a couple times. And, you know, our generation, I'm hoping, is going to be the generation that brings world peace. You know, that's what I'm looking for. That's what everybody should be looking for.
Totally,
you know,
totally
I'm talking
agree about
destroying the missiles, like putting the missiles in a pile and shooting a missile at the pile of missiles.
Well, what you're talking about there, I don't want to interrupt you here, but what you're talking about is non-proliferation and arms control. And this was a huge movement and it just stopped. In fact, we just refused to do an extension on the New START treaty with Russia. They wanted that treaty.
Yeah.
We didn't. Now there's no limits on civilian nuclear weapons. We appreciate the call. Ian, what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, look, you're right, Ian. I wish we could throw it in a pile. We were going the right way during the nuclear arms race. We were like, wait, guys, this is a race to the bottom. What are we doing here?
Yes.
This makes zero sense right now.
Absolutely.
So, yes, I agree with you. But here's the thing. It requires somebody to be the bigger person, take ownership of the fact that maybe we haven't been doing this the correct way and lead by example, but I don't think America's ready to do that quite
yet. Yeah, but we can be the generation that demands change, just like with these heinous drone attacks I see. Whether it's Ukrainian or Russian, I don't care. If you have someone in fear for their life and you have someone mocking them, flying the drone, them over and over and over again, and then eventually, boom, and then it's done. Morally against that, I think it's outrageous, just like chemical weapons. Let's go to number three. Lynn in Columbus, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. The duo that y'all have is dynamic.
Thank you.
And, you know, the way you press that gas and that and toward the last of it, and you just used a finesse and you just presented a question. And he opened up at that point and he let it flow and he directed it. And I could see it. I could see everything that he was saying, how this was going to evolve and how the phases were already developing. That was so wonderful to just see that brought out. You know, that is absolutely wonderful. And
well,
I know your dad's proud of you. And
Tim,
you asked for a lot of money because you deserve it.
Hey, look, man, I appreciate it. We're just happy to be here and get a chance to do this because I don't come from a media background. I haven't been doing this forever and it's just a very big, deal for me just to be able to have a platform to speak on. So I just do it for the love of the game. You know, I'm not here to grift.
We're super grateful. If you want to catch more of us, like we are live Thursday and Sunday. I assume maybe you've already checked out our Gray Area broadcast. Thank you so much.
The best way if you want to support is just give me a follow on X. That's the biggest thing for me. I don't need to get paid or anything like that. Just getting the support from the audience. If you really do care about what I have to say here, what I'm talking about here with Rex and you love our dynamic, like giving us a follow on X is the biggest thing.
And we do truly love doing it as well, Lynn. We both have full-time jobs. I mean, we're both small business owners. We do all sorts of things. Like we're here because we want to connect with you, and we're really glad that we have. Thank you so much, Lynn, for the call. Anything else you want to say in closing?
Well, I did. I clicked on, so I subscribed.
Thank you.
And just carry on.
Thank you.
We need y'all to do it.
I appreciate you, sir. We both appreciate you. Thank you so much. All right, really quick, we got more calls on the board. What the hell did y'all hand to us? We got a pile of photos of the guy wearing prosthetic breasts.
The first one caught me.
A dossier on who? I don't know who this is.
Yeah, you ever see that video of the guy on Instagram who's just showing a bunch of photos to these homeless people, and he's like...
Is that this guy?
No, it's nothing like that. I have no... It gets better.
Okay. Secret double life of Christy Gnome's cross-dressing husband, Byron, whatever, I can't see. Pouting, Brian with a Y, pouting, busty bimbo photos and trove of explicit messages. Uh-oh.
No.
Well, you know what? It's the golden age. It's the peace presidency. It's the perfect cabinet. Wow.
Are we allowed to show the photos is this not PG friendly?
Well, yeah, I think they're going to throw them up anyway. It's InfoWars nature. We'll probably throw them up anyway. You know, the Biden guy, the nuclear, the head of the nuclear stuff, he was running around airports, stealing women's underwear and putting it on in the bathroom, taking photos of it. This is a new thing. Let's get in with some.
Okay. He got the Lululemon shorts on, baby.
This is a bit brutal. We're witnessing.
What is he stuffing? Oh man, the face.
Yeah. He's tucking, not stuffing.
Wow.
He's tucking, not stuffing.
Wow. Okay, this all makes sense. This is the first photo that we saw when he landed. Yeah,
they throw us a pile of pages and we got this, but this is Christy Gnome's boyfriend, husband, whatever, Byron, caught in busty bimbo, photos. Okay.
Wow. Wow.
All right. Okay. So we got the inflation, we got the war, and now we got this. And here's the thing. This will be the thing everyone pays attention to. Mm-hmm. And then your prices are going up, your gasoline's going up, people dying at war. This will be the news cycle. This will be Twitter for a week. So we got our priorities.
Let's go to number five. We got Derek in New Jersey.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing, Derek?
How's it going? Hi, Tim. It's wonderful to speak with you guys. I love the new show.
Thank you.
And just give it a fresh, younger feel. I'm like a late generation. I'm like a later or one of the first Xers.
Wow.
I'm 60, but I'm very youthful minded, you know, than many of my contemporaries. So, you know, I definitely appreciate the younger points of view. They seem to be a little bit more savvy to what's going on, what's really going on. I just wanted to, I think so. Oh, and real quick, Rex, your dad played that video of you. You were like young kid, like 9 or 12, and you made that video of like explaining terrorism.
Terrorism 101. Yep.
Yeah. I think that was it. It was genius, pure genius. I loved it.
Thank you. We got to do another one of those. We got to do an update to that.
An update.
Yeah. But go ahead.
Oh,
man.
I would love to see it. It was like perfect. What I wanted to say was I was so glad to hear that you had Simon Dixon on. Is I found him just like maybe 3-4 months ago, and as soon as I did, I was trying to call in, and
he's
it never
amazing.
Happened. I was like, he's like the Alex Jones of finance, you know, in
yes.
a way, mind blowing. And I would love to see, like, this would be my dream, maybe to see like a debate between, like, I don't know if it would be a debate or more of a discussion between like Nick Fuentes and Alex, and maybe Simon Dixon and Catherine Austin Fitz or someone.
Sure.
That'd be an interesting lineup.
Sure. Well, this is the thing.
That would be awesome.
This is the thing, because like Simon Dixon is literally, he's like S-tier quality guest, host, whatever you're going to have him on the show, whatever you want to call it. I really want to get him on the Alex Jones show. We've tried to make stuff like that happen in the past. There are scheduling conflicts. There are things that arise, but you're definitely going to see more of him, people like Suleiman, people like Alex Stein, these people that are very active and have built up a very positive reputation for having the best information or the best takes on X, because that's really what we gravitated to.
Yeah.
We had him on the show months ago.
We had him on the show months ago.
You want to see that? You want to see a hour and a half long discussion with him, hour and 40 minute. We've got it on our YouTube.
Yeah, we've got it on our YouTube. You can go find that in the bio, the link in the bio. It was a great conversation.
Love it.
And we went into even more depth. So
Sure. Thank you so much for your call. Really appreciate it, Derek. Let's go to Steve in Alaska talking about what you were talking about, Tim, with the food price increases.
Yeah. So I'm one of those people that pay extreme attention. I work in the oil and gas industry, too. And my wife works in the oil and gas industry. And between the two of us, we made just over $230,000 last year.
Wow.
So when we go to the store, there's just us and our dogs. We look at the prices of things. And as an example, beef, hamburger, 80-20 hamburgers, $10 a pound at Safeway in Kenai, Alaska. Now, you can get the same beef over at a little mom-and-pop store about 2 miles away for like $6, $5 to $6 a pound. But even so, you go back pre-COVID, that same beef was about $3 a pound.
Yes.
Now, we talk about the war in Iran, and you talk about fuel, you talk about oil prices. You start looking at the impact of that. Not only are food prices going to skyrocket, food availability is going to go down because of the lack of nitrogenous fertilizer. I did work at a fertilizer plant for a company named Agrium that's in Nikiski, Alaska, but it's shut down right now. But you look at the lack, we've lost, what, 60-plus percent of our nitrogenous fertilizer in the last 4 years. Wow. Between yeah. Biden and Trump. And that doesn't even include other stuff like this natural phenomenon that's coming, like the grand solar minimum that nobody seems to talk about anymore.
Well, let me add to what you're saying here, because we did do a deep dive on this. You might have not caught it because this was one of the earlier episodes that we were doing on the journal. And I specifically covered not just the gas prices people are covering, but the diesel and the nitrogen and the fertilizer,
total
because
prices.
Those are the real meat and potato that actually leads down even more than just the corporations themselves gouging us and lying to our faces. But specifically, when I look at these situations and I look at what the gas prices are going, you know, we got Only Farms coming out.
They make a joke
and
yeah.
Trump is yep. doing that little dance you do.
Yeah, where he's jerking two yep. dudes off. Yeah.
And he's just dancing in front of the yep. farmers. And it's like, dude, you're literally getting railed behind the scenes, and you guys are cheering because this man. Do you know anything about E15 fuel? Because I'm sure you do. Like they're now trying to allow that to be used for
it's
the farmers,
destroy.
But it's going to destroy the ozone layer. From what I understand, like it's not the best yep. thing, right?
Yeah. No, I fully understand what you're saying. Trust me, I do. And when you start looking at the prices of diesel, like I used to heat my house with fuel oil, and it was non-road tax diesel. So basically, it's the same stuff you run your equipment on. And we were paying, the last time oil went up over $100 a barrel, we were paying like almost $6 a gallon. So when you start paying $6, $8, $10 a gallon for fuel, diesel, at the pump, the trucker's costs are going to get passed on to the consumer. The consumer is just, you talk about getting railed, and that doesn't even include the monopolies by all the rest of it. And let's go back to the corporations real quick. All those corporations are owned by BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street. 30% plus by every one of those companies. And they're the ones that are also behind the oil. They're behind all of it. And it goes back to the Sherman antitrust laws, breaking the Rockefellers. They understood, and they understand, the bankers understand the antitrust laws. They're not going to get caught again, so they created investment
This is why we call for new legislation. This is why we demand the existing legislation on the books already be enforced. Thank you so much. Sorry to cut your call short, Steve in Alaska. Sorry to everyone else on the board.
Call back tomorrow.
We're going to do this tomorrow again. I want to tell you right now, we've got the Zeolite Detox and Defense. That's the most powerful dechelator, basically, that you can get. There are multiple different types of it. We have one of the types that's considered to be the best. Right now, if you subscribe to it, you get it locked in perpetuity at $69.99 at 72% off. So you want to get that deal right now. You want to try the new product. If you tried Shilajit, it was amazing. Tried Methylene Blue, it was amazing. You tried Power Plant, it was amazing. Why not try Zeolite Detox and Defense? Does incredible things when it comes to heavy metal chelation, all the various properties that it has. These are ions, particulates that are negatively charged, and they gather up the heavy metals, and they do incredible things for you and your body. You're going to want to find out more about it. You're going to want to subscribe and save. And I'm going to remind you again, a free t-shirt for every subscribe product that you have. If you do it right now, you're going to want to do that deal. Incredible show.
Incredible show. Thank you. We will be back tomorrow. I will be in the house. I'll be here tomorrow. I'll see you on Friday. We got a great interview lineup for tomorrow. So you guys be tuned. Stay tuned with us. Thank you.
We love you.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where they put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel, so good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product, it's supposed to be available right now at thealexandrestore.com, is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexandrestore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexandrestore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexandrestore.com, and I thank you for your support.